This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super-packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238. 866-762-9238 or go to enterfood.com. That's enerfood.com. Enterfood.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not.
Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Lehman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci.
Well, Morning. This is Colorado Ron. We're here with Backwoods Home Magazine's Self-Reliance Exposed. And Bubba Da Vinci is not with me today. I've got David Safewater here with me this morning. How are you doing, David?
I'm good, Ron. Thanks for having me on. Great to be here. Good morning, everyone.
So we're pretty excited today on our lineup. We've got Lisa Bedford, also known as Survivor Mom. And she'll be on in just a few minutes. And then we've got on our second hour is Masad Ayoub, which we all like because we love talking about guns first thing in the morning. How about you, Dave?
You know, I do, and I'm really looking forward to it. One thing I got to say is I saw some classic, I've been watching some classic Masad YouTube videos, and the guy is just epic. He's like Chuck Norris's brother to me.
No kidding. I mean, this guy is amazing. I love Masad. He's from, he writes for Backwoods Home Magazine, and I tell you what, every time there's an issue with one of his articles, and I read it all the way through. This week, in the last magazine, they wrote about inexpensive firearms, you know, firearms that you can get for under $500. And so that's what our discussion will be on in the second hour with him. So we're pretty excited about that. And I'm excited because Bubba's not here to defend himself, so I get to talk about him all I want and beat him up, and he can't do anything about it.
Remember, Ron, it'll come back in the future episodes when you're off, okay?
Oh, my goodness. So this week's been a crazy week, and we've got a pretty exciting announcement. You guys are going to hear it here first. We'll make a bigger deal out of it later, but I can't keep quiet about this. Guess what happened, David? Guess what happened this week?
I have a feeling you're going to tell me that we're going to have an immediate change of president, or no?
No.
Oh, okay.
All right. Preparedness Radio Network, us, PRN, we have broken over a million downloads since we started. Isn't that amazing?
You're kidding me. A million downloads.
Yes, we're at 1,015,533.
Who do we have to pay to do that for us?
Isn't that amazing? I cannot believe that we broke a million this week.
That's exciting. So, I think that with a million downloads, it sort of shows me and people, it just sort of underlines the fact that we really are serious about providing content. We've got great hosts, and it's exciting because we're gonna blow those numbers even up more with, you know, great guests that we continue having, like Lisa, I'm looking forward to this morning, and Masad. And I'm excited. I'm very, very happy. Congratulations to the PRN. That's great.
Isn't that awesome? I think that's so cool. Obviously, we're going to make a bigger deal out of that because we want to later
on.
But right now, you guys that listen to us live, you heard it here first. Actually, you guys heard it before Bubba got to hear it. So. So we're pretty excited. One of the things I wanted to go over this week also, and we'll get into this a little bit later, is talking about firearms and talking about some of those things and how much trouble I get in every time I purchase a firearm. And so we're gonna try and come up with a plan to not get in trouble. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Yeah, that sounds like a plan. Guys are always scheming, trying to figure out how to not get in trouble. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later. The one of the cool things that we've had going on here is preparing for our next expo. And here's some pretty exciting news here. We are just about sold out for the Colorado Springs Expo. So that's in about a month. So we're pretty excited about that. We sold our last couple of booths yesterday. So we're full. We're ready to go.
We are rocking and rolling.
Yeah. So we're pretty excited. We've got, Lisa Bedford, Survivor Mom, is one of the women that we're going to have on the Ladies in Prepping panel at the expo. And that was part of the reason we have her on today, is to kind of pick her brain on that. I'm pretty excited about that. So that'll be cool. You're planning on coming to the expo, right?
Yeah, I absolutely will be there. I'm really looking forward to that, Ladies of Prep. And we're going to have Jackie, Kayleen, Amy, Lisa, and Patrice all there. Ladies of Prepping, right, on Saturday the 19th. And that's going to be 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm really looking forward to that, because all of these women, each one is a wealth of information, and each one brings in their own personality, their own audience. And I'm just really looking forward to hearing from this perspective that I can never fully appreciate, because I've got that different chromosome.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, they always put it in perspective for me so that I can understand where my wife's coming from.
That's really good life insurance. That is self-reliance right there, to make sure that the wife's happy, right? The wife's happy, yep.
That's right, totally. Because if mama's not happy, nobody's happy. Right?
Ain't nobody happy, that's right. Hey, Ron.
Oh, man.
I'm wondering, I have a question. I don't know if I'm asking Lisa here. I wonder if we could ever hear a word from the survival dad behind the scenes. Because, I mean, you know, behind the great woman, there's got to be remnants of a good guy. I mean, he's got to be a great guy. She has just been phenomenal. I know he's been a really good support with her. I was reading through some of her book last night, and man, she is rocking and rolling, man. She's really moving things along, and it's really impressive. And so I know that they both must be of a very high caliber. And so, you know, it'd be great at some point, I think, to hear maybe a little bit from Survival Dad at some point, her husband.
Oh, that'd be interesting. You know, that'd be kind of cool to ask. We'd have to, I personally got to talk with him a couple months now. It's been a couple months now. We all went out to lunch. But he's a very nice guy. Yeah, that'd be interesting to get him up and get talk with him.
Yeah, I think just hear his perspective of how it's been to observe her, because she is working feverishly. She was, especially writing the book she writes about. And anyways, I'm really delighted to be here and to help. We can ask some questions and things. So I'm excited. Thanks again for having me here, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's always fun to pick the brain of somebody else that knows more than me. So the other thing I wanted to do, I know I keep going back to Masada in the second hour. I got in trouble this week for a gun that I purchased a couple weeks ago.
Oh, what did you do now?
I know. I bought one of those Smith & Wesson Governors. I don't know if you've seen one of those, but it's a six-shot revolver that carries a 410 shotgun shell. So it's
a shotgun,
a pistol. Yeah, yeah. And I know.
And my wife's like,
"What did you
do that for?" Where'd you go shooting already with it?
Oh, heck yeah, yeah! I took it down to the range, and that's how I got in trouble. My wife saw it when I pulled it out, and. And she goes, "Where'd you get that?" And I'm like, "Oh, hold on. Let me show you what this thing does." Excuse me. And so I showed her the pattern, because it doesn't. Obviously, when you're shooting a shotgun, it just kind of blasts. And
right.
She goes, "You plan on shooting seven people at one time or what?"
Now you could put a slug in there if you didn't want to shoot buckshot.
That's right. You could. Yes.
I think it would break your wrist.
It is so cool to shoot that thing, though, and watch a pumpkin completely disintegrate or a watermelon just poof. It's wild. But anyway.
Now, where did you pick that up?
I actually bought it off of, here's a good site for you guys. If you guys don't know this site, I'm going to give you guys a little tip. Hopefully it's active in your area. It's nationwide, but it's really active here in Colorado. It's called Arms List. They Craigslist, but not. So it's like an it's a Craigslist for guns. So, I found it on there. A guy bought it, and he said he put 6 or 7 rounds through it, and it just wasn't for him. And so he wanted to sell it. So I got it for, I don't know, $150 cheaper than you can buy it new. And it still looks new. And so that was pretty cool. And I had the opportunity to go in and blast that thing. That was pretty wild. So, but anyway, we'll talk about that more in the second and third hour because I got to figure out how to get out of hot water here. anyway, so, yeah, the Lisa Survivor Mom, now she's came out with that book, and we're pretty excited. I want to talk to her. You said you were reading that book last night?
Yeah, I was reading some of it. I downloaded it, and I got to say, I like the composition. I always, you know, whenever I'm going through a book, I mean, I read quite a bit, and so my list has to be somewhat, I have to be careful about where I spend my time. And, you know, so I hear about things, I hear like this buzz about stuff, and specifically about Survival Mom, because, you know, I know some people who are good friends with her, and I've heard her content, I've read some stuff, I've heard a lot of her doing publicity stuff, and I got to say, I'm impressed with her as an individual, but sometimes when you read a book that somebody's put out, you're a little deflated, you're like, man, I wish this was better. But I got to tell you, with what I've seen so far, I've looked about 15 pages, I'm very impressed with it. I think she did a really, really good job. I like the format. I know some of it has to do with creative direction of working with the publishing house, but I really like the tips they have in there. I like the down-to-earth tone that it has, and it's very practical. It seems very practical. So I was impressed with it. I think that what I've seen is a good, right job.
Well, and that's what one of the things that I noticed about it is it was right to the point, and she, you know, she didn't do, there wasn't a lot of fluff, let's put it that way. Not a lot of fluff in there. You know, it went right to the point. That's one thing I did like. It's almost like she takes.
Yeah, she really does. She really does a good job in terms of, you know, keeping it lean. On a couple of examples I liked when we get Ron back here is that she has a class. She has an example of family A and a family B kind of thing. Whereas the first family, family A, is a family that's, you know, on the outside looking like they're doing really well, living on credit, have a really nice, I think Escalade is something she references in there. But basically there's a shell of supposed success. And when really behind the scenes, this family would be hurting financially and is at risk of losing their house, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the other family... Yeah, the other family is the one that's saying, "Hey, let's make sure that we have things. Let's live a little bit more with, like, you know, let's live within our means," is what she talks about, and that is what the message that every one of us who's a prepper either has come to learn over the years. Maybe it facilitated our move into the movement in terms of being more resourceful, or maybe we've grown up that way. So I really like that. I really like the tone that she brings in terms of making it palatable for every one of us wherever we're at.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know what, let's take a break, and we'll bring her on right after the break. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do it.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes 6 number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our 1 year plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Colorado Ron. Welcome back to BHM Radio. I'm here with David Safewater. You there, David?
I'm still here, Ron. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Hello, everybody.
All right. And then, so now we've got Survivor Mom, Lisa Bedford. Is she on?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you, Ron?
Good, good. Now, do you like to be addressed as Survivor Mom, or would you like us to call you Lisa?
Survival Mom.
Oh, you can call me Mrs. Bedford.
Mrs. Bedford.
I like that. Mrs.
No,
Bedford.
You can call me Lisa. Survival Mom is fun, and some people even call me Mom.
Mom. Ah, I like that one.
Lisa, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm David Safewater. We haven't spoke yet, but I'm thrilled to be on here with you.
Oh, hi, David.
So how are you doing this morning? Is it a little early for you?
You know, I realize that we are an hour behind Mountain Time. So Arizona,
correct.
We don't switch back and forth. So you know what? Everybody in the house is up, so it's a good thing.
Awesome, awesome. Well, that's good. That's good. I was afraid it might be a little early. It's always too early for me. You know, but you know, this was Bubba's idea to do this Saturday morning thing. I tell you what. Ugh. But you know what? It's good to get me up early on Saturday and get this out and get this done so that I have the rest of my day. To go and get, you know, the cool thing about doing this show is that I get all excited with the ideas from the interviews, and then I spend the rest of the day, you know, just prepping. But one of the questions I had for you was how in the world did you even get into prepping in the first place?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm asked that a lot, and it really just goes back to just a gut feeling that I had a few years ago, that I was kind of seeing, looking back, it was almost like a cascade failure in so many, on so many different levels. It wasn't just the real estate market. It wasn't just unemployment. It wasn't just the whole subprime mortgage and banking crisis. It was everything that happened so quickly and just bunched close together. And I looked at that, and I studied a lot of history. I used to teach history. And it just didn't feel right to me. And I told my husband, I said, we need to be proactive with this. And I started researching, and that led me to places like Survival Blog and so many of the different great forums and websites online. But, you know, ultimately I noticed that as a mom, there just wasn't too much that was addressed to me specifically, you know, because, you know, it was all fine and good to have the, you know, the armory and the ammo and go to the gun shows and stock up on freeze-dried food. But, you know, as a mom, you know, we have so many other areas of responsibility, you know, anything from laundry to, you know, changing diapers and reassuring our kids. And so that's why I wanted to start writing about survival from a mom's point of view.
Now, Lisa, from, you know, I've read your blog for a while now, and I've a good friend of mine is Jeff the Berkey Guy, and mm-hmm. I know that he had you on the show, and you were on his show. He interviewed you during the day of your release of your book. Now, your book's doing really well. Regarding the blogging, I know you started in 2009. Had you written extensively before that, a blogging kind of format, or had you had previous experience with that kind of stuff?
Never. The learning curve was so steep for me, it would be hard to even describe it. Because it was kind of ironic, because I thought I was very computer savvy. I mean, my husband and I met in a chat room almost 19 years ago. And so I was thinking I was computer savvy, and I was on the computer, you know, quite a bit every day. But as far as anything technical, you know, I got into a world with blogging that had, you know, acronyms, SEO, HTML. I mean, I didn't even know what the acronyms meant, much less how to actually do it. So it was a huge learning curve. I mean, it took me probably a month, maybe 2 months, to figure out how to insert an Amazon link. That is how backward I was. So huge learning curve. But, you know, looking back at the time, we were doing a pretty extensive home renovation. And so for big chunks of time, I couldn't even get into parts of our home. And I was stuck at the kitchen table. It was me and the computer. And I just wrote blog posts like crazy. And so looking back, I think that was a blessing in disguise, because I got so much posted and rather quickly. And then that led me to, you know, be noticed by, you know, Max Slavo over at the shtfplan.com blog, and Tom Martin at American Preppers Network. And they asked, you know, for me to contribute articles. And that's kind of where I was able to, you know, get a little a lift, you know, into the whole blogging world.
Now, does a survival mom work on PC or on a Mac?
You know, PC, but now that I've launched into YouTube videos, I wish I had a Mac. Some of the software for putting videos together, I guess, is so much easier if you have a Mac, and I just don't.
You know, that's totally true. I must confess. Are you a PC guy, Dave?
I am, and I've wanted to get a Mac for such a long time. You know, Adam Francis over at Quip to Endure has a Mac, and so does Amy, Nurse Amy from, you know, Doom Bloom. And yeah. I'm creeping over this.
One, I have one. You guys are missing out, both of you missing out. I'm telling you.
I'll follow Survival Mom here. When she gets one, I'll get one.
Okay.
Okay. Well, one of the questions that keeps coming up, you know, we send this out and everybody sends in questions. And so one of the questions they had was you choosing to be on Doomsday Preppers. What was your thinking behind that? And did you enjoy doing it? Mm-hmm. And did you feel that they shed the proper light on you, I guess.
That was interesting, because the first time I was approached by the production company, Sharp Entertainment, I turned them down. Their plans were very intrusive. Their questions were very nosy. They wanted to know how many guns we had and where we stored them. And they wanted to run us through some kind of a surprise drill. And, you know, I was conscious, you know, here I am, the survival mom on, you know, my blog, and I've done a lot of writing. And I thought, good grief, all I need is to be shown on, you know, reality TV, running around in a nightgown, screaming at my kids, you know, to grab their bug-out bags. And it wasn't a very pretty, you know, pretty scene. And I wasn't interested. I didn't want to be, I don't have any problem with giving information in an interview format. I've been a teacher and a trainer for, you know, 20-some years. And so to me, it comes very natural to, you know, give explanations and answer questions. But when they called back, they had a different plan. And the second producer I talked to, he was very reasonable and respectful. And my husband and I talked it over. And you know what? I thought I was doing my due diligence. I thought I asked the right questions. I thought I knew what to expect. What I didn't expect was the reality of reality TV, which is do anything you have to keep people from changing the channel. And if that means you show a big truck showing up in front of some lady's house, supposedly at night, to get the drama going, you know,
yeah.
that's what they'll do. And, you know, now that I've watched, actually I've only watched 1.5 episodes of the show, and, you know, in comparison to at least how others have been portrayed, we come across as boring, so boring.
Yeah.
You know, and now I know if that's what they were going for, I think that is why they had to figure out some way, whether it was through sound effects or lighting or creative editing, some way of making us look kooky. Because, you know, we don't have the bunker. I don't have the gas masks. I mean, you know, I haven't turned my pool into a thing where we eat tilapia every meal, you know. So we really truly are boring. And so... would I do it again? No, I wouldn't do it again. Now, Phil Burns, when he did an episode that was a pilot for Animal Planet, you know, I think that there were some things, I'm sure, over, you know, dramatized, but it was more a day, kind of a life in the day, you know, a life in the day of, you know, Phil Burns and his family preppers. And
right.
It was more realistic. And but you know what? Which show is getting all the ratings? Nat Geo.
Yeah.
So,
correct.
Mm-hmm, I don't know. I will tell you, I'm very grateful that they did not think of having some expert give his or her opinion on how likely a scenario it was that I was supposedly preparing for. Because here's one of my beefs with their, you know, the rest of the series, is that Nat Geo, or I should say Sharp Entertainment, assigns a scenario to whoever they're interviewing. So they asked me, will you represent hyperinflation? And hyperinflation is a possibility, but that's not the only reason I'm preparing. So when someone says, you know, we're preparing for a meteor to hit the planet Earth or whatever, they have been basically assigned that. And that may have been something, you know, oh, you know, this could happen or this could happen, but Sharp Entertainment comes and says, well, we want you to represent this. And then at the end of the show, you hear the voice of the narrator say, our experts tell us that the likelihood of this scenario, you know, is 1 in 5 million.
Right.
And I'll tell you, my beef is that these families and individuals have made themselves very vulnerable. I don't think any of them, or at least most of them, are, you know, publicity freaks. I'm not. I mean, I agree to be interviewed. I like to give information. But... they've made themselves vulnerable, and then they're just completely cut off at the knees when the culminating, you know, commentary on their segment is they're preparing for something that's never going to happen.
Correct.
And that, and they don't get a chance for any rebuttal. So in our case, you know, I was criticized by their expert, who, by the way, I found out later lives in a big city. And the survival expert said, you know, they said, well, Lisa has chosen to ignore our expert's advice to evacuate Phoenix. And I explained to the producer, you don't evacuate Phoenix. Phoenix is a city of about 4 million people, the whole entire valley, and all the surrounding smaller cities. And I mean smaller, I mean like hundreds of thousands, as in smaller, not, you know, some little village. And there is one highway that goes north-south, there's one highway that goes east-west, and there's one highway that gets to the diagonal. There's no getting out. And so it wasn't that I was being cavalier and saying I want to, you know, we're going to stay here no matter what. It's like I'm just realistic. And so, you know, they don't allow the people to really give much of a rebuttal to their expert, to much of an explanation. So I don't know. I mean, some individuals I have read were pleased with the way they were portrayed, and others not so much.
You know, you're exactly right. I mean, I've talked to Phil. I've talked to John Major, who was recently on Doomsday Preppers. I've talked to a couple of other people. And, you know, I've talked to some of these producers, too. And, you know, to hear your response, I'm really happy that, you know, you say it for what it is, because this one thing, I love beef. When you talked about the beef, I was like, yes. You know, these experts, these apparent experts that they have come on, I mean, yeah, they're setting you up with a scenario, and then they're dumping on you, saying, hey, you know, well, you're missing this, this, or that. And they're just going to say that because they want to have the appeal, the brand appeal of, you know what we're talking about, we have someone resident, whatever. But one thing, a point that you just made, I love, I'd like to that goes in that your book makes, that I really enjoy, Lisa, because I haven't read through all of it, but last night in prep for this interview, I wanted to have the content. So I went down to Amazon.com, found your book, downloaded it for my Kindle, and started looking through it. And I have to say what I love about it, and I want to hear, if I may, I want to hear a little bit more about the, you know, creative process in terms of how much did they want to change these kind of things. But you have a tone in there that keeps it real, keeps it simple and practical. Did you have to battle with them at all to maintain that? Because you come across, you convey that in your communication, on your blog, in interviews that you've done. And so did you have to, was it a struggle at all to maintain that kind of voice that you felt was important with your reader?
You know, what's interesting is that I felt sometimes that I was living a Cinderella life. Because my blog came to the attention of a literary agent in New York, and he told me from, I think, our first conversation, what I love about, you know, your writing, Lisa, is the tone. And I think the tone was a selling point, in fact, when he took, you know, I wrote three sample chapters. And by the way, I'm going to be making probably two YouTube videos because I have learned I should not make long videos. It takes forever to upload and it causes technical issues. But
yeah.
You live and learn. But I'm going to be making a couple of videos because I get a lot of questions from people who want to write either survivalist fiction, or they have their own idea for some kind of a guide book. So I want to go through the process of what I learned and what worked for me. But it actually was that tone that I think was a big selling point. And so, no, they didn't. The only chapter that was removed from the blog or from the book was a pretty big chapter. I need to go back and, you know, see how many words it was when I wrote it. But it was probably maybe an 8,000-10,000 word chapter on skills. I had a whole section on, you know, skills to learn and how you can utilize these and, you know, different kinds of scenarios and how they might be useful for earning money or survival. And my editor just, you know, she just said, I just cut the whole chapter. And, you know,
wow.
The book is 320 some pages long. And so I, you know, and now I'm getting ready to write another book. And it's like, you know, she may have done me a favor. I may take that chapter and, you know, and use it in some way in another book or expand upon it and make it a book all on its own. I don't know yet. But as far as the tone and the content, you know what? They let me write whatever I wanted to about firearms. You know,
yeah.
I have a friend who wrote a book with another publisher, and they wouldn't let her include information in her book about guns.
Maybe so, because Bank of America was financing that publishing.
I don't know.
You know what's going on with Bank of America. You heard about it?
Is it new as of today? I try to keep up.
No, not as of today, but
okay,
isn't
so
last,
tell me.
Last few weeks. Ron did a Facebook post on it, and that's how I saw it because, you know, I work online, and so I'm very pointed in where I spend my attention. Bank of America is not going to be supporting a particular company that sells, you know, guns and things. They're anti-gun, right, Ron? Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to make that point just because, you know, I love the
so
fact
they told him to find another banker.
Yeah, and, you know, so people are really up in arms about it, you know, pardon the pun. And then we're going to have Mossad here
right.
After our interview. And I'm really looking forward to that. But I think that your tone really – let me ask you. Ron's trying to ask a question now, but I want to ask this one question here real quick. In terms of the response from females, from other stay-at-home moms that have perhaps have been reluctant to embrace the firearms, or even from gentlemen, but what's been the response from the public, from females that, you know, were very hesitant or reluctant to embrace firearms and directly with what you've done for them?
You know, the only thing, I read a review the other day, and it was just from a regular mommy blog. It wasn't in the prepper niche at all. And the only, you know, her criticism was, because I think the whole idea of preparedness was, you know, 100% new to her. Was just, you know, it was just overwhelming. She thought my giving instructions for, you know, how deep to dig a hole if, you know, you're, you know, you don't have a toilet. She thought that was way out there. And, you know, maybe it is, but I mean, as I say in the book, you know, for years, moms were up to their elbows in poop, peep, and poop, pee, and vomit. And, you know, sanitation is a big issue. So surprisingly, she didn't, you know, this is just a regular mainstream mommy blogger. She didn't mention anything about firearms. And I have not, you know, heard any criticism about that inclusion or any commentary, you know, pro or con. I just, and I think the reason for that is I was really careful. I did not want to send the message that a gun will solve everything. And I wanted to make sure that for the typical mom, if she can stay awfully safe and she can keep her kids awfully safe, if she is very situationally aware of where she is and of what's going on and who's around her, just that alone. In fact, I'm developing, basically it's going to be survival mom, you know, survival mom's law, that nothing beats being in the right place at the wrong time, and nothing will save you if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so I really wanted to, you know, for it to really sink in, you know, you need to be aware of what's going on. And here's information about guns if that's your choice.
Very well said.
You know, like you said, the guns are not the answer to most situations. And I think there's a lot of people out there that need to let that sink in and start their preparedness plan from scratch again. But I had another quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
As a father of six kids, I'm very curious how you get your kids involved in prepping.
Mm-hmm. You know what I've discovered, and I think one of the two things. Number one is attitude. When I was a teacher, I figured out really quickly, even as a brand new classroom teacher in junior high, they threw me in junior high, half my students were Navajo because I was teaching near the reservation, and I figured out really quickly that my attitude went a long way towards affecting the attitudes of my students. So with my kids, if I approach something completely matter-of-fact, very calmly, oh, this is just the way it's going to be done from now on. We're going to have a food pantry. You know, by the way, those big old bags, that those have wheat. Those bags are full of wheat. You know, it was brand new, but because we were casual about it, it was nothing unusual for them. And so now they know where the big pantry is and they know where things are stored. And so to me, the attitude is everything. Because our kids, my goodness, I mean, they are so sensitive to what goes on with their parents. And, you know, we can be sitting, you know, watching a sad movie and my kids are glancing out of the corner of their eye, you know, is mom crying yet? You know, every such, you know, really subtle little things. And so, but when I am just, you know, hey, this is the way it's going to be done and I'm not, I don't appear to be afraid. There's a quote that I found. The quote is wonderful. And it's in my book. And just a paraphrase, it says, you know, keep your fears to yourself, but share your courage. And I think that that is probably the best thing that parents can do. Now, on a practical nature, I'd like to just share this. And what really works with families to get the kids more involved is just developing new hobbies. Hey, a new hobby is we're going to learn how to make bread from scratch, from the wheat. A new hobby is, you know, we're going to go camping and we're going to learn about, you know, some things about wilderness survival. Camping, I'm going to go on a camping rant on my blog in another couple of weeks when the weather gets warmer. But there are so many skills and attitudes of self-reliance that kids can learn just from, you know, some camping trips. And so if you, even for a spouse who's not crazy about preparedness, you know, it's hard to argue, you know, if you say, hey, well, then as a family, I'd like to teach the kids, you know, how to make, you know, homemade soap. You know, kids, you know, why don't we learn how to, you know, to do this new skill, and approach it as just a fun new hobby, a new activity. You have family bonding time. You know, dad's involved, hopefully, and it's hard to find a downside to that.
No, I totally agree with that 100%. You know, my wife often tells me that the kids only like what I, my ideas and not her ideas. And I think, you know, now that you said it that way, I go back and I think about that. And it's because of, I think it's probably because of the attitude I have when I'm talking to them. You know, I sell it to them, really. Oh, look how cool this is. Look at what we're going to do. And blah, blah. And I get them excited about it. And then once they see how excited you are and they're excited about it, then they get behind you 100%, usually. So I think that's part of the reason why my kids haven't had too much of an issue with any of the prepping that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lisa, I have a question here about, you know, it's clear to me that your husband's supportive. I'm, you know, because I work in consulting outside of things, my company, I'm interfacing with a lot of people that are all across the spectrum of self-reliance, the whole category. And there is a large percentage in my experience of couples that are not equally yoked in the prepping movement, in you know, maybe storing a little extra food, spending money on other things. And I'd like to ask your advice to these folks who are struggling with maintaining a good working relationship with their spouse, but still be able to prep in small ways without having to maybe compromise the go behind their back kind of mentality.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, in tough times, relationships, especially a marriage, just the relationships you have could be what saves your life. And I think, but at the same time, I think that people who, you know, married people who are in, you know, good, solid relationships, I think that it's going to be even more important to maintain those relationships. And a big part of that is just, you know, mutual trust. So I'm not a big fan of going behind the other person's back and doing things, especially where spending money is concerned, you know, unless, you know, one of the individuals, you know, if a wife has, you know, money of her own, if she, you know, earns money and it's already kind of an agreed upon arrangement where, you know, she pretty much has, you know, control over how her money is spent. In my house, we don't have her money. You know, we're pretty much, you know, we're both in it for the long haul. And so whatever I have is his and vice versa. But what is has been kind of entertaining to me is when I go to forums and sites that are primarily for men, I read a lot about my wife or girlfriend isn't on board. But when I started writing my blog, I heard just the opposite from my women readers. My husband thinks I'm a nut. So it's kind of funny because it works both ways. It's not just, you know, sometimes it's a wife who sees the need for it. And I think rightly so, because so many women are the ones who are already into survival in their home. You know, they're the ones who are dealing with, you know, the food and the meals and the shopping. And, you know, if they're maybe the ones, you know, in charge of the checkbook or balancing the, you know, the family budget, they already, those are all elements of survival. So as far as advice goes, I would just, again, see, you know, what can be done on a budget, because I don't think it's fair to spend a whole lot of money behind someone's back. And then see what you can do to increase your own individual bank of knowledge and your own repertoire of skills. And so if you can learn, you know, how to cook, you know, cook and bake from scratch, if you can learn how to grow an herb garden, if you can learn something about herbal remedies, if you can learn, you know, how to raise chickens, you know, all of those things, I believe that skills actually have a tangible value. And, you know, the example I've used before is, you know, if my son would, you know, become injured and maybe, you know, break a bone, and a neighbor has a huge stockpile they have medical training and they have, you know, supplies, I would pay that person just for their skills with almost anything I had if they could treat my son. And so I think sometimes the emphasis is too much on acquiring things, and I think that's a lot of times what causes friction in relationships. You want to spend how much, you know, on another, you know, AK-47? You know, are you crazy? And a lot of it, maybe, and more attention maybe should be spent on learning skills and gaining new knowledge.
That's a really good point.
Ron, that AK-47 comment wasn't directed at you, I don't think, but, you know.
I don't think she listened to the first part of the hour.
She might have missed it. Yeah, great tip, Lisa. Excellent. Thank you for that.
Oh, and I wanted to say real quick, I got to interview Masad Ayoub for my book.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was researching, and I was at a point, here's one thing that not many people know. According to my book contract, which I got in January of 2011, I had 3 months, 90 days to write a book that was 100,000 words long.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and it was crazy. It was crazy around here, and so I had to get out of town for weeks at a time. You know, I mean, I'm a homeschool mom. I mean, there's just, my kids are very, you know, they're used to me having me around. They're used to being able to interrupt me, and I'd have to get out of town. But at one point, I was so desperate, I just looked up Masad Ayoub, and when I was doing my research, hey, if someone had a phone number online that was posted, they were fair game. So I could just pick up the phone, and if it was a home phone number, I didn't even care. And in his case, I was able to get his cell phone number. I called the poor guy, and he gave me some good advice, you know, which I included most of it in the book.
Yeah, he's a great guy. One of the questions I had for you, talking about purchasing things, was what was the number one must-have gadget for prepping?
Mhm. Yeah, you know what? I'm not a gadget person.
Good. Ah, thank goodness you answered it that way. I was waiting to see.
I had a feeling he had the questions
that came through. I was like, this is going to be interesting. Let me see what she says on this one. I am so grateful to hear you say that.
Now, why is that?
He was on Amazon looking for, he was going to type in whatever you said, and he had his credit card ready to buy.
Not true. I'm not a gadget person either. So I was waiting to see what you were going to say on that one.
Yeah.
But,
you know what? If you'd asked me.
One of the questions, so I wanted to ask
you. You know, if you would have asked me what tool, I would honestly say the most important tool that we have free, all of us have free and unfettered access to right now, and I don't know how long it will last ultimately, is the Internet. And I believe that that is a blessing that we can look up and connect, not just look up information, but we can connect with other people who think like we do. And one thing not many people know about me is that no one on my side of the family or my husband's is on board with any of this. And so we, you know, as far as relationships go in real life, where we are 100% on our own. And so when, you know, when people make connections and, you know, they start, you know, maybe emailing or they start, you know, commenting on forums and they start connecting with people who have the same concerns, same questions, you know, the Internet is absolutely invaluable. And I know there's a lot of garbage on the Internet, but my hope is that somehow it's a very, very, very long time before it's controlled, you know, by any government.
I totally agree. That was, you know, I was thinking about that the other day myself, and I was like, man, I wish there was a way to just, like, save all this information before we don't have it anymore. You know, so that I could tap into this information when I'm ready for it or when I want it. And I tell you what, that's one of the things that I'm going to cry about the most if we ever lose it is the Internet. Boy, I'm going to cry like a baby because I just love it. I turn to it all the time. I agree 100% with that. Okay, well, one other question I had, and, I got a ton of questions, but this is another one that I found very interesting and I wanted to ask, was that do you consider yourself a prepper, a survivalist, or a mom first?
You know, whenever I get this question, I'm so worried that I'm going to offend the survivalist. If I say prepper, I mean, offend the preppers if I say survivalist. So I, first of all, I never heard of the term prepper. And when I was in high school, which is a very long time ago, you know, I really fought against any kind of label. And so even now, it kind of is like, oh, I just don't know that I want to wear the label prepper, only because I'm the oldest child in my family, and I just have always thought, oh, I'm just doing my own thing. I don't fit into any kind of niche. Wow, look at me. I'm such an individual. And here, you know, I guess I've, you know, there are plenty of labels you attach to someone like that. So, but what the way I see myself is just a smart mom who pays attention to things and who really tries to be proactive. So if someone says, well, that makes me a prepper, okay, I'm a prepper. But, you know, survivalist, the only reason that I would say I don't define myself like that is just because the traditional definition of survivalist is someone who moves away from society and, you know, moves away from, you know, city life, or, you know, moves away from people. And right now I'm not in a situation where I could do that even if I really, really wanted to.
Okay. Well, you know, and I agree with that. The one thing that people always talk about is the, you know, I'm a survivalist, or I'm a prepper, or whatever. But the one thing that I like about getting into this stuff too, and you may have found this out as well, is that is the cost savings. You know, when you're buying in bulk anyway, and the fact that, you know, one thing I hate, and my wife always laughs at me about this, is, I know this is a stupid thing, but when I have a sandwich, I want some chips with it. And one of the things I hate is not having the chips with the sandwich. It drives me nuts.
Ron, my husband is the same way.
Is he really?
I will make dinner, and if I don't have chips, he will leave the house, he will run down to the convenience store, and he will buy chips.
I cannot do it.
That is the most bizarre thing I have ever heard.
That is so
funny.
He is
really going to like
you now.
I've
never met another person like that. That is so funny you said that. That is cool. But, you know, so the fact that we have a grocery store in our basement, you know, for times like that, I tell you what, makes it convenient. Not only that, but we also save a ton of money in the long haul. Do you find yourself in the same boat?
Of using the food and not having to go to the grocery store?
Well, yeah, and saving money in the long haul. Do you realize, are you spending more money being a prepper, or are you saving money?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously both. And that is one hard truth, one hard fact of life for being a prepper and just, you know, preparing, is that at some point you do have to spend the money at some point. And whether it's just a few dollars a week, that's all you can afford to buy extra cans of super tuna, but at some point you do have to spend the money. Now, I was telling friends last night, we were talking about the very same subject, and I was talking about my big bags of, I don't even know, are they 20 or 40-pound bags of sugar? I mean, I have these huge bags of sugar. And, well, sugar has gone up in price dramatically. And so, really, if you're grocery shopping, you know, right now, prices will, I don't think prices are ever going to be lower for food than they are right now. So, yes, in the long haul, you absolutely do save money, not only because of the increasing price of food, but also just for what you mentioned. You know, if you can run to the food storage pantry, that keeps you from going to the grocery store where you walk in planning to buy, you know, three ingredients, and you walk out and you have spent $70.
I know. It's crazy. and I can't believe how little $70 buys you nowadays.
Yeah.
You can actually carry it without a cart sometimes. So, Lisa, do you have a few more minutes with us?
I do. It's almost 8 o'clock. Yeah, I can talk for a few more minutes.
Okay. So let's go to break real quick, and right after that, we'll wrap up with you. I've got a couple more questions for you, and thank you so much for being on with us, Lisa. And we'll be back right after the break.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello, hello everybody. Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm your host, Colorado Ron. I'm here with David Safewater, and on our guest right for the next few minutes anyway is Lisa Bedford, Survivor Mom. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm fine.
All right. Hey, I want to jump right into it because I know your time is valuable here. You're coming to the Self-Reliance Expo next month.
Yes, we can't wait.
Isn't that going to be fun? I can't wait to see you. That's going to
be
all.
It's going to be a blast. And, you know, the nice thing about these expos is it brings together, you know, excellent speakers. I mean, just the speakers I've heard about so far, Ron, are just I want to be sitting in the sessions, you know, and so I'll be there. My family's going to be there. I'm looking forward to meeting, you know, some of the vendors that I've known as advertisers and sponsors of just the whole, you know, prepper community. So it's going to be a great time.
Yes, I can't wait. You know, and that's one of the things that you touched on right there that drives me nuts. You know, putting on the expo is awesome. But dead gummit, I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. I never have time to sit down and absorb as much of the information that's out there as I'd like. And that's the part that kind of stinks.
Yes.
it'll be fun. You're going to be part of the Ladies in Prepping board,
yes,
the panel. And so we're excited to have that. We're going to ask you some really crazy questions. No, I'm just kidding. But it'll be good, informative questions. So if anybody's out there is listening that wants to come to the Self-Reliance Expo, this is going to be an amazing expo with the panel of the ladies we have lined up for that. So I'm excited about that. I can't wait for that to happen. Now, you know that in the next few minutes we have Masad Ayoub coming on, who you're familiar with. You said you talked with him before.
Yes.
And he's talking about guns. But Dave said he has a question for you about guns before we go into Masad. So isn't that a little crazy?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
You know, on the graphic that we put together for Ladies of Prepping, the upper left-hand side on SupplianceExpo.com, I have a couple of six-shooters up there because I was thinking that hopefully you could take some questions about that. My question I wanted to hear going into Mossad, but I want to hear from you, is do you feel that it is important for a parent or a family, the adults, responsible adults, to own a weapon in order to keep their family safe? And what if you do, then what do you recommend for parents who don't believe in guns?
Yeah, well, I think that unfortunately, over a period of decades, guns have just become more divisive than they really ever need or deserve to be. You know, even with the Trayvon Martin incident, you know, you have Bill Cosby coming out and say, you know, the problem was the gun. Not individual behavior, it's just the gun, which, you know, I have always viewed as just a tool. And so,
correct,
as a parent, we have taught our kids it is just a tool. And it is not, I think, Ron, maybe you mentioned earlier, it isn't a solution to every problem. And there are some things, I'm sure George Zimmerman would agree, that it makes some situations far worse. And it just takes a whole lot of not training, but wisdom and maturity. And I would never, I think it would be presumptuous of me to tell every parent out there, you have to have a gun. And yet, the practical fact is that probably is one of the best things that a parent can do, is to have some means of protecting their family, because bad guys will always bring the maximum amount of power, of force, a board with a nail in it. You know, whatever the most violent weapon they can get their hands on, they'll bring that, you know, to a situation when they intend to commit a crime or do violence. And I think probably the worst feeling as a parent would be, to look back at an incident and say, I could have done something about it, you know. But for whatever reason, I bought into the propaganda decades old. You know, I mean, this propaganda machine against firearms has been going on, you know, for decades. And I just challenge parents just to take a second look at that. You know, just take a second look and say, why the necessity to brainwash, you know, over something that is a tool, something that's been a part of American life, you know, for, you know, more than 200 years. And I guess I'm just too much of a protective mom to say, yeah, I'm just going to depend on, I took a class in, judo, and I'm ready. No. And one other, I know this is kind of rambling, but, another thing to consider is a lot of times we talk about the bad guy. Oh, if a bad guy breaks in the house. Well, you know what? Bad guys have buddies. And there are a lot of incidences where it's not just a bad guy. I mean, it's someone dealing with, three or four people who break down your door in a home invasion.
Absolutely.
You know, it's several people who attack a young woman. And absolutely, I think that I'm not going to tell every parent, yes, you must buy a gun. But when it comes to home protection, personal protection, they're really, you can't beat that when confronted by, some evil people.
Yeah, and
I would agree.
It's really important, I think, that I just want to make this, point made. You made it, and I want to underline it. You know, an art like judo requires close-quarters combat, and to use that, you're in some pretty dire straits. And so, I think it's important that individuals look into, understanding a weapon before they get it, and contacting an individual. And now people can contact you, Lisa, if they want to reach out and go to your blog, thesurvivalmom.com. Your Facebook and Twitter. Where else can they connect with you?
Well, if they go to my blog at the very top, there are buttons where they can click on a button and they can go to my Twitter page as well as my Facebook page. And I do teach several free online classes every month. And I have one coming up this Thursday evening. It would be 7 p.m. Central. And that class is called, we call it an Ask and Chat. I have one of those a month. And my co-host is Bernie Carr, who is the apartment prepper. And so I offer food storage classes and water storage classes and just on all kinds of topics related to survival. They're not just for women only, and they're free. So it's just a matter of clicking on the big red button at the top of my blog page and taking a look at the schedule.
Fun, fun. Okay, so now where can everybody find Survival Mom, the book? We want to make sure that everybody can get this book, because this is a great book to have in your resources. You know, everybody has a shelf of books that are must-haves, and this is definitely one of them. So where can they get this book?
You know, if you go to there, I actually do have a website. It's called survivalmomthebook.com. And that will lead you to a page where it can be, there's a list of bookstores, it's on Amazon, it's on Barnes & Noble online, and you can also just call your local bookstore. I was surprised to find out that a couple local bookstores here, other than Barnes & Noble, carry the book, so you can also just ask.
Well, that's awesome. Hey, you know, Lisa, I really appreciate you coming on this morning and taking away from your Saturday there. I thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I loved it.
Well, thanks again. I appreciate it. And we'll let you get going here and get back to your Saturday there. So thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on. We really appreciate all the information you give us. And we look forward to seeing you in a month.
Yes. All right. Take care.
Hey, thanks a lot, Lisa. We'll see you. Isn't that awesome? She's so cool. I'm excited to see her at the Self-Reliance Expo. She's so fun. You know, every time we get together, it's just nothing but laughs and giggles. So we have a good time with that. But you know, she's a great gal. The book here, you know, while she was talking here, I was just kind of scanning through this book, and I found it interesting. I forgot about this, and I meant to bring this up, but you know, she has survival mom stories of different women, not just her, but you know, throughout the book, you know, like one on here on page 157, you know, it's Pam Staples out of North Carolina, and it talks about her story of being a survival mom. So it's pretty interesting. I really like that part.
Yeah, I saw that too. I think it is interesting to you know, from a business perspective, even be able to brand that. That's cool.
Absolutely. You know, and I really like her perspective on guns. You know, though it isn't the answer to everything, but it's, you know, at the same time, it's kind of silly to think it's never going to be the answer or never could be the answer either. So the one of the things I meant to ask her, we'll have to ask her next time, but I'm kind of curious what her choices in arms.
Firearms? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, her firearms. I was kind of curious to see what that was. The, but yeah, you can go to her website again, and everybody knows her blog. You know, she, one of the things we didn't talk to her about either was, you know, she made a, you know, she was doing her blog, and she was pretty busy doing that, and then she turned around and got on Glenn Beck, and I can't imagine that the traffic didn't jump after she got on Glenn Beck as well. So,
yeah.
But, you know, so that's pretty cool that Glenn Beck interviewed her. I did talk with her about that in private one time and asking her, and she said that he was, like, a super nice guy, and it was like a whirlwind just to, you know, One day they were talking on the phone. Next, you know, the next morning she was flying out to New York. So it was pretty nuts. But that's pretty crazy. What's your take on it?
You know, I think she's a great lady. I love. You know, I'm amazed. I really am amazed. I'd be excited to be in her classroom as a student because she has an authority in her voice. And, you know, part of it comes from being a mom. I can see it with my wife and the way that she's with our kids. I know that Heather, you know, has the mom essential, the essential mom gene. You know, they're awesome mothers. And just from an instruction point of view, you know, I'd love to take a firearms class from her because I think that her angle on things, to keep things practical, would lend itself to things that maybe I've never learned before. I've never known. So I think she's... I love how she's down to earth. She's very matter of fact. She has a good sense of humor, and it's refreshing to see this kind of success for her. I'm very, very happy for her, and we're going to continue supporting her. I'm really looking forward to hearing what she has to say at the Expo with the Ladies of Prepping event. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, and you know, and like I said, that's probably one of my most favorite things is how down to earth she is. And you know, when we met, it was just like you know, meeting old friends for the very first time. Very first time we met, you know, we're sitting there talking just like we were just old friends. So it was great. I found it funny that her husband can't eat a sandwich without chips either.
Yeah,
I've never met another person like that, but. I will literally, if my wife brings me a sandwich and says there's no chips, I won't eat the sandwich. I can't. I just can't eat the sandwich. I have to go to the store and get chips.
I want to know, Ron, what are Colorado Ron's favorite chips? What are your chips? If you have your choice of premium chips, what do you eat?
You know, I would have to say that I'm a very plain guy. I like plain potato chips. You know, the the traditional just potato, yeah, like a Lay's potato chip. And then I also like, if I get them with flavor, probably, you know, if I had to grab a second bag, it'd probably be like a jalapeno flavor, like a Lay's potato chip jalapeno flavor. But, I'll eat Doritos. I eat them all. I've eaten them all. But, you know, if I have to pick or if I get to pick, that's a better way to put it. If I get to pick, then
if the kids don't beat you to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, luckily they usually go for like Cheetos or something like that. And, you know, those are fine, but that's not my first ones to get. So, so we haven't had that much of a problem.
Yeah, I love. We could do our own show just talking about food and stuff. You know, one thing.
Yeah, because you're always taking pictures of food.
Dude, I haven't been doing it as much because I've just been so swamped. But you know, yeah, I love taking pictures of food. I mean, it's better taking pictures of the food, you know, before you eat it than after, right? So I think you know, I gotta say, you know, talking about food, there was a funny comment last night about gum. And our guest about Mossad. I don't know if he read this. He doesn't have time to read the comments on YouTube videos that are featuring him, okay? But, you know, there was a fantastic comment, okay? I loved it. If you go to YouTube, okay, search Mossad Ayoub, and the video series is Shoot to Live, okay? Now, this is an interview where he's sitting there. He's got a blue polo on. He's got his watch. And he's being interviewed by a gentleman. Oh, I can't remember his name. Is it Rob McGilly or Rob McGill? Something McGill. And, you know, great, great interview. And there's eight segments, and each one's about 10 minutes. But under video 5 out of 8, Mossad Ayoub, Shoot to Live, 5 out of 8, or 5, like a fraction, 5/8. The first comment, the top comment there by Defender78, quote, "Listening to Mr. Ayoub talk is awesome. I feel he could give a lecture on chewing gum, and it would still come across as epic," unquote. That's awesome, because this, you know, Mossad is like Chuck Norris to me. Mossad is, you know, I have a membership to Frontsite. Ron, do you have a membership to Frontsite yet?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, eventually we're going to get you one, because I know that we can have a lot of fun. Me, you know, Berkey guy, you know, get Bubba Da Vinci over there. And wouldn't it be amazing if Mossad were to be an instructor? We'd get him out there and we'd buy him all this food, sushi and stuff, because I love sushi. And we get him to teach us a course on chewing gum. I would be taking copious notes. He is amazing. He is amazing. And what an honor to have him here. I just love his sense of humor. And one of his videos, Ron, he says this. I know he's here right now, but I love how he says in this video, people, go watch this. Shoot to Live. 8 segments on YouTube.com. Go watch it. He talks about the Alamo. And he also talks about, you know, when an invader's coming in, you might want to, you know, based on your actions and what you do, you'll get them to reconsider the negative attitude. I just love the way he says those kind of things. It's fantastic. So I'm really excited to have him on. I really, really am.
Well, actually, I'm glad you're so excited, because Mossad should be here by now. Is he here?
Hey, fellas, how are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Mossad?
Not bad for an old cripple. How about you guys?
What an honor to have you on, Mr. Ayoub. Thank you so much.
Very kind. Yeah, just mass, please. Mr. Ayoub is my dad.
We just had Survivor Mom on, and she was talking about how she tracked you down when she was writing her book.
That was sweet.
she's a great gal, and I thank you for helping her out with the arms firearms section in her book. That was awesome. So
my pleasure.
My question for you, you know, obviously one of the articles you just recently wrote was on firearms, inexpensive firearms, I guess I should put it. Firearms for under $500. Is that right?
I did.
Okay, so that's kind of a tough one, but at the same time, there are plenty of good, solid guns under $500. And so, you got me thinking, and after I got done reading that article, I went back and started looking at what I had that was under $500. And, of course, when you open it up to new and used, I mean, you know, that opens up a whole new category, really.
It really does. If you read the article in Backwoods Home, and, of course, it's available online at backwoodshome.com, I probably spent a good quarter to a third of the article telling folks, if you're new to the gun, here's how to find where the bargains are in the used guns. It's like getting a low-mileage used car or a car that's been very well-maintained. You may not be familiar with a particular machine, but someone in your circle of friends is. If it's your first car, bring them with you to the used car lot to help check it out. And similarly, if this is going to be your first gun and cost is a big concern, get someone in your circle who really knows that type of gun. Bring them with you to the gun shop to check the thing out. And you'll come out of there probably with a pretty good savings. And guns, let's face it, are the ultimate durable goods. I don't know anybody who keeps their food in their grandfather's refrigerator or icebox. I don't know anybody who drives their dad's 1960 Oldsmobile or their great-grandfather's Model T unless they had taken it to the auto show. I know tons of people who hunt with their fathers and their grandfathers' guns. They're the ultimate durable goods. Nobody throws them away, and damn few people use them enough to wear them out.
Well, that's a very good point. I've seen guns passed down generation after generation after generation, so you're absolutely right on that one.
Last year, I picked up a Winchester Model 94 that the family of the owner sold it after his death. It had been manufactured, according to the serial number, in the year 1926. It had been on the wall in a Florida cabin probably ever since. Almost all the blue finish was worn off it. The stock had dents and dings in it. The bore was as bright and perfect as the day it left the Winchester factory in Connecticut. And the action over the decades had been worn just smooth as glass. And the thing shot under a 2-inch group with 150 grain 30-30 ammunition.
Wow.
So you've got a sense of heritage. You've got something that, you know, going on 90 years ago, somebody was shooting deer in the palmettos with. And if nothing else, that gives the object a little bit of character, and if you want to go that far, a little bit of karma.
Do you even have, and you probably do, but I can't imagine, how many guns do you even have?
Somewhere between 300 and 400, counting the working guns, the investment guns that I keep stored off-site, what I call the exemplar library. I do a lot of work as an expert witness in homicide cases. The death weapon, of course, remains the property of the court until trial is done and the case is adjudicated. And it's difficult at best, for me to fly to Dayton, Ohio or someplace, have someone with a prosecutor's office go with me when I do a test with it at the firing range. So in legalese, basically an exemplar is not the exact same gun that was used in the shooting or the exact same vehicle involved in the crash, but it is a specimen identical to it for testing purposes. So I keep one of, you know, most of the most common guns, the different Berettas, Glocks, et cetera, et cetera. And that allows me to just go out to my own range and do whatever test we need to show, for example, how rapidly the gun could be fired, how many shots per second, things of that nature.
Now, Massad, you had mentioned on that video, I don't know if you've heard the pre-you coming on, I don't know if you heard the comments I was making about the Shoot to Live series that is on YouTube.com.
Yes, I have two words for you, double mint.
What's that?
Double mint.
Double mint.
Double mint. Oh, gosh. I have to say, Mr. Massad, I'm sorry. Massad, it is such an honor. You know, you've been a lot of places. Your sense of humor reminds me of a wrestling coach I had in high school. The wrestling coach was an amazing gentleman, someone I still revere to this day, Mr. Alvarado. And you both have an amazing mustache that I can't grow because of my Mexican heritage. Just sort of gives me this blotchy kind of stuff. Ron saw me when I was trying to grow facial hair, and I just decided to shave it off because otherwise it looks just lame. But, you know, you made a comment in that series. You made several comments that were worthwhile to me. I currently do not have a firearm. I got rid of the, you know, I used to have it was an antique, but it still worked properly, a 38 special. It worked very, very well. I got rid of it because, you know, we have three kids now. I don't have a safe. The first thing I'm going to do is buy a safe before I get into buying the firearm.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And one thing you said in there, my purchase that I was planning on purchasing first when I get that safe is the Remington 870. But you said in that video that you'd recommend a handgun or home protection over, and I love that because I was thinking about the kids. You made the point of this. I can't, if I'm holding two of the kids, the 1-year-old baby in one arm and the 4-year-old girl in the other arm, and trying to close the door, trying to turn the lights off, trying to do and hold a phone, I won't be able to do that with the shotgun, regardless of whatever sling setup I have. As with a pistol, a handgun, I would be able to do that. And I thought that was a very valid point. Now, Ron picked up. Ron, you want to tell him about your recent purchase here? Because I think I'd love to hear what Massad has to say about this.
Well, I sent you an email talking to you about the new Smith & Wesson Governor.
Mm-hmm.
You get the kind of the best of both worlds. You get a pistol and a shotgun kind of in one. And I was just kind of curious what your take is on that Smith & Wesson.
Well, the Smith & Wesson Governor was that company's answer to the Taurus Judge that came out a few years ago. And for the listeners not familiar with it, it's a fairly substantial size revolver. It will fire a 410 shotgun shell or a 45 caliber revolver cartridge. The good news with it is you have versatility, and I think they're great fun guns. They're great novelty guns. The downside of it is for it to be legal, that is not a sawed-off shotgun, it can't have a smooth bore. That is, the inside of the barrel has to be rifled. And with the shot cartridges, buckshot or the smaller birdshot, when it's spun by the rifling, it comes out of the muzzle in a widening cloud. Even at really fairly close range, you generally tend to get, with the judge at least, kind of a donut pattern. That means that if you have, say, you're 3 or 4 steps away from a small, fast-moving copperhead. You aim dead center and you fire, there will be a puff of dust around the snake, but nothing's actually going to hit the snake, at least not in the head. Because of the manufacturing considerations, the guns are, I would say, mediocre in accuracy. I have a Taurus 45 caliber revolver that will shoot into 2 inches at 25 yards. I've never seen a Taurus Judge that would do that in the same caliber. The Smith & Wesson, which will take the 45 Colt cartridge that the Taurus Judge does and the 410 shot shells that the Taurus Judge does, will also take the 45 ACP, the 45 automatic cartridge, colloquially. And that gives you a lot of versatility, but you've got a very subtly different bore diameter between 45 ACP and 45 Colt. And I would not be expecting the gilt-edged accuracy from the Governor that I expect from Smith & Wesson's and dedicated calibers. That said, I've not yet shot the governor, and I wonder how that would sound out of context. And no pun intended, I think the jury is out on the judge. But both of them certainly are fun guns, and they'll be useful. For personal defense, I prefer something, you know, that's going to fire one cartridge that I know what it's going to do. And while I have Taurus guns that I would trust with my life and have, and many Smith & Wessons I would trust with my life and have, it's the old thing, the jack of all trades is master of none.
Yep,
if I want to shoot bird shot, I'll use a shotgun.
Absolutely, and that's what I found with it is the cool thing about it, obviously, is that you can, as a, you know, if you're thinking bug out bag, you know, or I don't know, what am I thinking? What am I trying to say? The last gun that you might have as far as the versatility, I guess, you know, being able to use a 410, 45 ACP, 45 Colt, and actually I've used 22 mag in it and 22 long rifle because you can buy those adapters from 410 down. So being able to shoot that many different kinds of rounds. Now, you're also absolutely right that it is not as accurate as I would like, but you know, Winchester, I believe, has came out with a new round. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's got the three discs in it. And, and that it was a really cool round. I was amazingly surprised at how accurate those discs hit. You talk about hitting within 2 inches at 25 yards or whatever. Well, you know, I mean, those three discs usually take the whole 2, 3, 4 inches. I mean, there is just a big hole right there. It's at least a silver dollar size, and then you've got, you know, usually seven hits around it within, you know, within a foot or two, depending on how far out you are. So that is a really, really cool round, and I thought it was pretty neat. But the problem with that, and the problem with having so many different options, is you're never going to be, at least what I think is, you'll never be loaded for the right scenario. You know what I mean? You're either going to be spraying when you need to be, you know, having a one single shot in the right direction, or you're going to be shooting a 45 ACP that's not as accurate when you need to be spraying, you know, or vice versa. So that's the problem that I see with that.
No, I can't disagree.
Wrong.
Okay.
There are guns for recreation, there are guns for serious business, and so long as we don't confuse the two, there's room for both.
Exactly right. I wanted Ron to hear one of the experiences, too. You remember the story you talked about, this your friend who had a very close encounter to, well, I know you have several friends who had several close encounters. One particular gentleman that used WD-40 on his weapon.
Yes.
Can you tell that story?
Yeah, well, basically WD-40, the WD stands for water displacing. And among other things, it's a metal penetrating oil. Most of us in the business do not use it on our guns. We'll use CLP, cleaning, lubricant, and preservative combination products. The WD-40 is great for the hinges on your car door and your house door and all that, and it's a useful household thing. On guns, you find over the long term, it tends to kind of harden up, and it's like shellac gun into your gun. Love the smell of the stuff, though. But anyway, it puts in the short term, it does what you need done, and it puts a very nice shine on the gun. And my friend, who will remain nameless because he's a little embarrassed about it, and he went on to a decades-long career as, you know, a very, very sharp firearms guy. He sprayed his off-duty Model 36 Chief Special back when New York cops like him carried revolvers. And he liked the shine so much, he figured, well, darn, I want to have shiny bullets, too. So he basically sprayed the cartridges with WD-40. Well, it's a metal-penetrating oil, And what he did not realize was the metal had penetrated the primers and rendered them inert. And for 6 months between qualifications, he was carrying a gun with five dead cartridges in its five-shot cylinder. And the day came one night off duty. He's returning home by subway. And a mugger comes up to him, pops open a switchblade, and basically, I forget the exact words, but, you know, tells him your money or your life. He draws his chief special, aims at the guy, whips it out, brings it up to the guy's head, pulls the trigger. And he told me, I heard the loudest sound I ever heard in my life, click. And what's going through his mind is, he's going to slash my throat, and I'm going to die now. And on the other side of the gun, he sees the guy's eyes have gone so wide, he can see white all the way around the iris. The guy's mouth is open and a silent scream. He sees the guy's eyes roll up in his head till it's all white, and the guy keels over on his back in a dead faint. Which proves that God does look out for fools and drunks. But,
oh, my goodness. That is hilarious. Well, hey, Mass, we got a couple of questions from the chat room here. So if you don't mind, I'd like to vary off the subject a little bit here.
Sure, not a problem.
Okay, we got two here. The first one is, what is your opinion of the High Point 9mm rifle? Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, it's actually a distinctly better, more reliable product than the High Point pistol. If you go to the High Point forum, for those not familiar with it, it's a very low-priced gun that uses a lot of castings, and it's seen as an entry-level product, shall we say. The owners who are happy with them do not strike me as regular users and shooters. I'll occasionally, to keep my hand in at the very basic beginner level, help out with some friends of mine where I live who do concealed carry classes. And a lot of their students are first-time shooters who went into the gun shop and said, hey, I'm not ready to jump into this whole gun thing with both feet. What's the cheapest pistol I can buy to start? And they end up with a High Point. And I do see a lot of them that will jam, particularly on hollow points. It's a very clunky gun. It needs a lot of physical strength to operate the slide. The trigger is not particularly conducive to marksmanship. And I've seen some of them that the sights are so far off, they don't hit anywhere near where the gun is being aimed. That said, I hearken back to the 60s when they did the big Saturday night special thing and said, we must ban cheap guns that have the choice of criminals. Well, that's absolute discrimination against the people in this country who need guns most. The good, hard-working Americans who are trapped in poverty, probably not in the best section of the city. And you find when you look at it from the criminology perspective that a great deal of crime in America is committed by poor people against poor people. The lady that cleans the office at 3 o'clock in the morning and has to walk home on dangerous streets alone in the dark is the person who probably needs the gun more than the six-figure-a-year executive she's cleaning the office for. And to tell her, well, if you can't afford a Smith & Wesson, you can't protect yourself and your family, is kind of like saying, okay, if you can't afford a Mercedes-Benz, you're not fit to drive a car in America.
So that's a good point.
I'm glad the High Points are out there for the people who need some kind of a gun, and that's the best they can afford. I would personally be looking for a used, police trade-in Smith & Wesson or Ruger that will be pretty close in price, but still has the quality. And remember, these things do not wear out. As a general rule, we will wear out long before our guns wear out.
Yeah. Now, the other question somebody had here was the Kel-Tec KSG 14+1 shotgun. That's that new, I don't know if you've seen that one.
It's a radical design and a very promising one. George Kellgren is a brilliant designer. The only thing is it hasn't been out long enough to be really field tested. A couple of bugs came up with the original design, and to his great credit, Kellgren picked up on it and said, damn, you beta testers are right. And he changed the design and solved the problem. But any gun, any new cartridge, when you buy it, when you're the first on the block, you become the beta tester. And for something like, you know, a new Blu-ray, a new toaster, you know, a new corn popper, whatever, that's fine. For something you're going to use to protect your life, to maybe once in your lifetime have to use it to save the life of someone you love, I don't want to be the beta tester. I don't want to be the guinea pig to find out how well this new thing works. Blessed are the guinea pigs because they prove things for the rest of us. But I stay with the stuff we know works. In the 1980s, I became involved with an ammunition company that was breaking some new ground, and particularly in the medium-powered cartridges like the 9mm. We were just seeing stopping failures, bad guys taking multiple shots in parts of the body that, you know, the 357 Magnum or a 45, probably based on history, would have put them down, but they stayed up long enough to hurt somebody before they fell. And we knew what we had then wasn't working. We need something better. We took our chances. We risked our life for the new stuff. The new stuff worked, and today has become the new paradigm. That said, now that we have stuff we know works, I don't want my people to be the guinea pigs who are going to find out for a small, almost inconsequential increment of improvement that there may be some drastic failure. I've seen enough new guns come out that, you know, the factory had a recall, just as happens with anything else, from baby carriages to automobiles. If you're going to risk your life on it, my advice would be get something that's been proven on the street. It's a known quantity. We know it works. And wait for those blessed guinea pigs out there, the beta testers, to let us know whether the new thing, we'll know in 2 or 3 years how well the new thing is working out. And we'll see if that flies for us. I'm looking forward to testing the Kel-Tec KSG. They're in great demand and short supply. But right now, I'm still staying with the old proven designs that I know work. But I think the KSG is a very, very promising firearm.
Yeah, and I agree. The unfortunately, Kel-Tec's kind of like that with a lot of their guns. Is they're always in short supply. You know, when they came out with that 22 mag, PMR 30
shot 22 mag.
Yeah, that was it's actually 30. It's 30 shots.
Oh, 30. Right.
Yeah, it was 30 round, and that. It took me forever before I finally was able to get my hands on that thing.
How did you like it?
That thing is a flamethrower. I could not believe the amount of flames that come out of the end of that thing. That is insane. For a 22 mag, I've never seen anything like it. I wasn't expecting that, really. But it's super light. If you're wanting to throw a lot of rounds down, you know, down range, that thing... That's the thing, you know, that's the ticket. I mean, you can do 60 rounds in, you know, 20, 30 seconds. It's just nuts. It's a fun gun. And again, it's, I wouldn't make it my number one defender. It's kind of like the Governor. It's a novelty gun. But it's not something that I would, carry with me at all times as my end-all be-all.
Each type of gun has its place. With apologies to Sarah Brady, by God, you can have fun with guns. And Americans have known that since we were still in the British colonies. There were informal rifle matches in the colonies long before the War of Independence.
Now, Masada, I have a question here. I'm going back to the content I've seen because I did hear you when you were on previously with Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron. And, you know, one question I have, because I'm a research nut. I love reading data, because data sort of indicates what we can do differently in our behaviors for individuals. You had mentioned in that video series there was McGill?
Lenny McGill, yeah. God, that was like 1990.
Yeah, a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that you'd mentioned there, I'm curious in terms of you know, statistics and things like this, because I'm always looking over numbers. Is there, you had mentioned then that there was not a repository of empirical data for all of these engagement events, you know, street fights with firearms kind of thing, you know, a central resting place for this data.
Yeah.
Currently, has that changed in terms for law enforcement experts like you?
To law enforcement, we have it, but we have it piecemeal. For many, many years, including back at that time, the FBI had done their annual officers killed summary, which was a detailed study of every event in which a police officer was murdered in the line of duty. Now, it was useful in many ways. It showed, you know, certain constant factors that being too much of an officer friendly caused you to drop your guard, that complacency would kill. The average murdered officer had been on the job for about 7 years. And there's a reason there's an American phrase called 7-year itch. You know, when you've been doing something for 7 years, it starts getting boring, it starts getting routine. And when you're doing something dangerous, you have to remember there is nothing routine about this. The downside of that was it showed us only what happened to those who lost the fight. The officers who were winning the gunfights, simply who are the ones we really needed to model on, were not showing up. Now, FBI has gone far beyond that now with their team that studies the assaults on officers nationwide, but they still don't have every one that occurs, only the ones that are reported to them. There is no empirical database at all on armed citizen shootings. We have anecdotally, department by department, New York City, since 1970, has had what they call SOP-9. Standard Operating Procedure number 9 is the intensive debriefing of any officer who fires his or her weapon in the line of duty. And it goes into details like exact distance, how many shots, what position the officer was in when they fired, if they remember, did they use their sights or did they only point. That's one department, though. LAPD had done something similar, but when there was, you know, the whole, oh, police brutality, oh my goodness, you beat Rodney King and all this, it was decided that it was not politically correct to be publicizing the details of the gunfights. So that information no longer leaves LAPD. That, by the way, I thought was a classic injustice, because anybody who's seen the whole Rodney King video realizes that it opens with Mr. King lunging for Officer Powell's pistol and grabbing at it. And it's at that point when the first blow of the baton is struck. But I digress.
Right. Yeah.
So the short answer is we do not have a nationwide empirical database at all for the private citizen who uses the gun in self-defense. And we do not have a complete or perfect one for law enforcement, nor for that matter do we for the military. The action is simply too heavy in Afghanistan and was too heavy in Iraq for every soldier and Marine who's been in a firefight to sit down and have an intensive debriefing. You bring them back, you feed them, you give them 2 hours sleep, and you send them back out to perform their mission.
Now, yeah, I'm in Southern California. I'm actually in Los Angeles area. So when you talked about Rodney King, I was intimately familiar with the goings-on here. And, it's really interesting. Here in California, I have friends who moved out of state, and, you know, they have their concealed permits, concealed carry. And, you know, it's fascinating. So you are across the country on the East Coast, correct?
At the moment, I'm teaching in Chicago. I'm doing a two-day civilian class over the weekend, and for the last 5 days, I've been teaching at the International Law Enforcement Educators and Trainers Association. We had about 720 police instructors there from all over the country and several foreign countries.
And Masad, when are we going to be able to have the privilege of having you attend one of our self-reliance expos and potentially speaking?
Wow, good question. Find one in 2013. Find one in 2013. Let me know this year when it's going to be. My schedule tends to fill up about a year ahead. This year I'm shooting less than half the matches I would normally shoot. because the schedule filled up so fast that by the time the matches like the Carolina Cup were announced, I was already booked somewhere else. And it's the same with speaking engagements. I have to book pretty well ahead.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so let's bring this around and back on the inexpensive firearms. The as far as the shotguns go, you recommended the Mossberg 500 and the Remington 870, correct?
Specifically the Remington 870 Express. Yeah, they're probably the two best buys today in a reliable, high longevity, versatile 12 or 20 gauge shotgun. In the 20 gauge, I would specifically recommend the Mossberg over the Remington. In the 12 gauge, it tends to be which gun's safety operation mechanism best suits the user. The Mossberg is ambidextrous, and the safety is on the top of the tang, very handy to either thumb, like on a double-barrel shotgun. On the Remington, it's a cross-bolt at the back of the trigger guard. It's reversible for a left-handed shooter. But, you know, some are simply habituated to one, some to the other. They're both excellent, reliable firearms.
Now, you opened up another question there, just real quick, because I've gotten this question several times before, too. Is 12-gauge or 20-gauge for home defense?
Well, I think the 12-gauge certainly has been the traditional one. Historically, Americans have modeled their choice of a sporting rifle on what their military used, and we've seen that for over a century now. In the early 20th century, the shift from the frontiersman's lever action to the kind of bolt action rifle that, you know, the Krags that they brought back from the Spanish-American War in 1898, and particularly the coming of the Springfield bolt action rifle in 1903. And those became basically the paradigm for the sporting rifle for the rest of the 20th century. The AR-15 rifle, there is a reason that colloquially to a lot of us now, AR stands for America's Rifle. It is the single most popular recreational target shooting rifle. It has become hugely popular for groundhog hunting and for wild pig hunting. On the defensive shotgun side, defensive firearms Americans have tended to model on their police. At the time when most police carried a .38 Special or .357 Magnum service revolver, the single most common home defense handgun was a Colt Smith & Wesson or Ruger 38 or 357. Today, just as with the cops, we're seeing primarily a switch toward higher capacity semi-automatic pistols. With the shotgun, it's been pretty much the same. The slide action and to some degree the semi-automatic shotgun was for many years the standard long gun for police before the coming of the patrol rifle, the AR-15. To that sector. And historically, the cops used the 12-gauge because, by God, they used it on the frontier in the 1880s. They were using it at the turn of the century. They were using it in 1950 when the Remington 870 came out. And by God, son, I'm the chief. And if it was good enough for me when I started 30 years ago, it's good enough for you. I think for home defense, one of the best-kept secrets is the 20-gauge shotgun. And the reason is the assumption with the 12-gauge, which, as you know, with a full-power load has pretty heavy recoil, the assumption was, well, it's going to be a big, strong cop, it's going to be a big, strong soldier in the trenches or the jungle using the shotgun, and it's going to be, by God, the man of the house defending the castle. And we've got to remember, the person who actually needs to use that gun might be the homeowner's petite wife, might be the homeowner's 14-year-old son or daughter who is not yet at full physical height and strength, but is responsible enough and has been taught firearm safety and responsibility enough by the parents that they absolutely can defend themselves against and their family against an intruder. The 20-gauge shotgun has much less recoil than the 12-gauge, yet you're sent with, let's say, number 3 buckshot. You're sending out, with each pull of the trigger, 20 25 caliber projectiles. It is basically a full-power 20-gauge buckshot or rifled slug load, is pretty close to two 44 Magnum revolver rounds. And you know what? For the anti-personnel function, that will do. But the person who cringes from the recoil the first time they fire the 12-gauge, hand it back to the husband and say, "I'll get you for this, Ralph. I'm never touching that again," is not going to be prepared to use it in self-defense. The one who experiences the lighter recoil of the 20-gauge and says, "Ooh, I can hit with this. This is kind of fun," is not going to be hesitant and is going to be in a much better position to defend herself. So we found over the years, particularly the physically smaller people, and not just females, the smaller statured male, anyone who's got any kind of a shoulder injury, the elderly. As I creep into geezerhood, I'm finding the recoil of the heavy guns that was exhilarating when I was young is now no fun at all. And I know a lot of the old gunnies in my age group that always carried a 45 that have switched to a 9mm simply because they're finding the heavier caliber guns more painful to shoot. And even if you are a 6'2", 200 pounds, 7% body fat, male bodybuilder in prime of life, you may get to where you with a 12-gauge can outshoot me with a 20-gauge, but you will never get to where you with a 12-gauge will shoot faster than you will shoot with a 20-gauge. And I found particularly with the new shooters in self-defense shotgun classes, if we give them three targets, silhouette targets the size of a human aggressor, the average new shooter will be able to nail three of them with a 20-gauge in the time it would take them to nail two with a 12-gauge.
Wow.
So putting all that together, I found the one thing we've got to remember, when we select our personal recreation gun, it tends to be as personal as our golf clubs. The home defense gun is a pool weapon. When I say pool weapon, it's like a shotgun, a patrol rifle, and a police car that might be used by one or two officers on first shift, might be used by one or two officers on second shift, and might be on the same day employed by one or two other officers on third shift. The home defense gun might be used by Big Strong Ron. It might have to be used by his smaller, more slender, and delicate wife. Might have to be used by his mom when she moves in with him and is suffering from osteoporosis. And might have to be used by that 14-year-old son or daughter. So the home defense gun, I want to be selected not for the alpha male of the household, but for the physically smallest, least physically capable person who mentally and in terms of responsibility is likely to be using that weapon to, as Colonel Jeff Cooper used to say, to repel boarders.
That's valuable. You know, my wife is 5'1", and she weighs about 105, 110 pounds, soaking wet. And, you know, I've wondered for a very long time which gauge I'm going to go with. There's two reasons why with what you've said and recommended is viable to me. One, the most pressing reason is I think the, like you said, the functionality in terms of the recoil on that 20-gauge. And the other one will lend itself naturally, latent, as a latent factor, which is a psychological effect of the impact of that recoil. And it's pretty much, I'm pretty much made up in my mind here with this article. This, you have so much information. I hadn't had a chance to read it, Ron. It's an excellent. I'm looking through this as I'm listening to you, and you have some fantastic points here. Not in the fantasy sense, but relevant. And these are powerful points that, you know. I mean, goodness, the resources that you have. I'm looking forward to going through all this stuff that you've created over the years. Your content, and you know, eventually signing up for classes and stuff. So this is really exciting. I mean, you broke it down in a sense that's palatable and relevant to specifically my situation.
Well, I would suggest when you buy the 20-gauge that you also get one of the so-called youth models. The youth model is designed for smaller statured folks. If she's 5'1", she'll have proportionally shorter arms. And if she's using a shotgun that's stocked for a tall man, she'll have to cantilever her shoulders back to hold it up, which will take her off balance, and the recoil, even from a 20, will literally walk her backwards.
Wow.
The shorter stock allows her to lean forward into the recoil, And by the time she's reset the trigger, the gun's back on target, and she's ready for the next shot if she needs it. For you, no matter how much taller you are nor how much longer your arms are, all you have to do is pull it tight into the shoulder, lean your head a little bit more forward, and the gun will run as well for you as one stocked perfectly for you would have.
That's a good point. Yeah. Now, on to the rifles. You know, it's funny as I was reading this article, because a couple of days before that, I happened to, you know, and I'm sure this happens to you, and this happened to a couple of my friends, where, you know, I was up there talking with my neighbor, and he's like, "You're into guns, aren't you?" I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "I got this old gun." He goes, "I was thinking about selling." He goes, "You interested?" And I said, "Well, sure. Let me go over and take a look at it." And I went to go take a look at it, and you know, it was a Winchester Model 70, and it was the featherweight stainless, it was in, he had a scope on it and everything like that, and I asked him how much he wanted for it, and he told me $200, and I don't think it's ever even
fired.
Oh, my God.
Pounce it.
Yeah.
Pounce on it. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Jesus,
I jumped
Jesus.
On it.
Yeah. Either that or give me his phone number.
Yeah, so I grabbed that gun, I snatched it up, and you know, what a great buy. And you know, that happens every once in a while, and it's nice, but you know, that falls into that $500 range, and an opportunity to get a deer gun, you know, a deer hunting gun of that caliber for that price is just, it's hard to beat.
No, that's a great deal.
So on to the next one, pistols. What would you recommend for an under $500 pistol? Before you answer that, here's a dilemma I have. I've been going back and forth between 45 and 9mm, and I decided on 9mm, and so I bought, I don't know, a couple thousand rounds of 9mm, and I recently sold all my 9mm guns. Because I was thinking about going to 45. So right now I have 2,000 rounds of 9mm, no 9mm gun, and I'm thinking about either selling the 9mm ammo and just buying all 45 stuff, or buying a Glock and going back to 9mm. So with that in mind, what would you recommend?
I can't say it's a big trend in law enforcement, but a small wave in that ocean. We're seeing some departments that have had the 40 caliber pistols going back down to the smaller 9mm. And what they are citing is that, you know, with today's modern ammunition, the 9mm does virtually as well as the 40, but much lighter recoil allows the officers to shoot faster and hit better. Yesterday I had the privilege of moderating the panel of experts at that ILETA conference, the police instructors, and we drew probably 60 or 70 instructors from around the country and some from Europe. And the Europeans are using entirely 9mm. The panel of experts I had up front was 11 people who, I added up their collective experience, it was 438 years of police firearms training.
Wow.
The majority were supportive of that. Look, we'd rather they get center hits with a 9mm fast than slow hits peripherally with the larger caliber. Now, some of us do prefer the 45. Hell, I'm carrying one today, and you know, carried one all last week, and we'll carry it next week. But particularly, again, we go back to the element of the pool weapon. If it's not just you, my brother, that 5'1" wife is the one who is probably going to need that gun more than you. Most smaller people shoot the smaller guns better, the smaller lighter-kicking guns better. And if you got the right ammunition, I'd recommend something in a 124-grain hollow point at about 1,250 feet per second. You're going to get the job done. The Speer Gold Dot 124-grain plus B is used by New York City, and they are delighted with it. They feel the union feels no need to go to a more powerful gun. When they're shooting people, the bad guys go down. Chicago police are authorized to carry 9mm, 40, or 45 the second largest municipal police department in the country. The issue gun now is a 9mm, and probably the single most popular gun among these officers who have a choice is the 9mm. They issue the 124 grain plus B. They found it worked much better for them and stopped opponents quicker than the 147 grain 9mm subsonic they'd had before. And the ones that feel more confident with a large caliber gun, hey, God bless you, fella, go out, buy one, carry one, qualify with it, and you're good to go. But the majority are perfectly happy with their 9mm.
Interesting.
The 9mm is also standard issue for our third largest municipal police department, Los Angeles Police. The great majority carry the issued 9mm gun, even though they have the option of carrying the .45 caliber.
All my friends in LAPD do carry the 9mm.
So what would you recommend pistol-wise for under $500 in that category?
The Glock comes pretty close to that. It's in the 600 suggested retail range. But it's pretty hard to break or wear out a Glock pistol. And a whole lot of folks, you know, trade in their Generation 3 for, ooh, I want the new Generation 4. It fits my hand a little better. And it's no trick at all to get a good used Glock for $500 or less. The same would be true with a secondhand Smith & Wesson military and police model. The Springfield Armory XD series are very good pistols. There also, we're seeing a lot of the older Smith & Wessons, what we call the third generation, like the model 5906 or 5904. The 04 would be aluminum frame, the 06 would be stainless steel and somewhat heavier. But you're talking a 16-shot 9mm pistol that's reasonably accurate, and I'm seeing them sell for $400 and sometimes less if they have a lot of holster wear. Most of the police departments, you know, when the guns are costed out after 10 years, will routinely trade them in. And remember, we're talking the most durable of durable goods. They're like safes in terms of wearing out. A good traded-in police Beretta, Ruger, or Smith & Wesson 9mm semi-automatic would be an excellent choice. They will have a fairly long trigger reach, and if your wife has a small hand with short fingers, that could be a concern.
So just, how about that Glock? Does it have that reach as well?
The Glock is the Glock works very well for short fingers. When my older daughter was 11, she wanted a 9mm. I bought her a Glock 19, and it worked fine for her, though she later switched to the Browning and the Colt 45. And as she got older, in her late teens, she's a tall girl with long fingers, she found she shot best with the Beretta and the Smith & Wesson, which is what she has now.
Now, the Glock, would you recommend, for something that is for a grab bag or for an everyday conceal, small and light, with, you know, obviously carrying the most rounds, what model would you recommend?
Probably the best compromise would be the Glock 19. The 17 is their 18-shot full-size service pistol. Their little one, the so-called baby Glock, the Glock 26, is an 11-shot snub-nose pistol, for want of a better term. The Glock 19 is in the middle, where the 26 is a subcompact and the 17 a full-size. Glock lists the 19 as a compact gun. It's the most popular of the three optional 9mm pistols on NYPD with 34,000 male and female officers. And the reason is it's the lightest, probably the most compact. Most New York cops carry 24/7 when they're off duty. And if your career path takes you out of uniform and into plain clothes where the gun has to be concealed, it's small enough to do that discreetly, yet it's big enough to shoot very well. One of the best shooters on the GSSF circuit, these are the Glock matches, Glock Sports Shooting Foundation, is my friend Mike Ross. And instead of competition guns, the gun he prefers to shoot is a Glock 19. It's the same gun he carries every day. He shoots it accurately enough that he's beating the rest of us with longer barrel pistols. And it's a very good all-around gun.
Nice. Okay. Mass, you have just a few more minutes.
Sure.
We have to take a quick break here. Sorry about that. We went over
with you in about 10 minutes. I'm going to have to get back to class.
Okay. Not a problem, not a problem. We'll be back in just a few minutes after our short break and get back to asking a couple more questions. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humla Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humla Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humla Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello and welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm your host, Colorado Ron. I'm here with David Safewater, and our guest today is Masada Ayoub, who is a writer and contributor to Backwoods Home Magazine, and we're just about wrapping up with him today. Thanks again, Mas, for participating with us today, and I know you're a busy man. So
it's always a pleasure, fellas. Thanks for the good work you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. I know we're short on time here, so a couple of other quick questions we had these budget or least expensive ways to go to get the guns for, you know, getting guns and ammo for under $500. And one of the things you mentioned in your article was Appleseed Project. I personally am a huge fan of Appleseed. I know that Backwoods Home Magazine is a huge fan. It looks like you're a big fan of Appleseed.
I sure am. It's one of the best things that's happened to the shooting world in a long time. Kids are free. Females shoot for free. Soldiers shoot for free. And ordinary working stiff males, it's like $35 or something. You got 2 days of shooting, about 500 rounds, excellent coaching in traditional rifle marksmanship, and leavened with some of the best, most passionate lecturers on Civil War history and the roots of American ethos and self-reliance that you'll find anywhere. Do a Google search for Appleseed Shoots. You'll probably find one somewhere within striking distance of where you live. Take the family. You won't be sorry. You can do it with a 22, so it's not all that expensive. And it's, as I said, I think it's one of the coolest things that's come along to the world of the gun in a very long time.
Absolutely. You know, that's probably one of my kids' favorite things about our expo is the, you know, Appleseed is at all the expos.
Oh,
and, great. Yeah, they do air rifles inside inside the building for the kids and give them some basic training there. And so my kids are always, they get in line, they shoot, they turn around, get right back to the back of the line and do it again. And they have a great time doing that. Appleseed guys are awesome. I love it. And I highly recommend that training for anybody. But
we've got some feature articles on it in the archives at backwoodshome.com. And if you backtrack through my blog at backwoodshome.com, you'll find some of my commentary on it there as well. But that's
awesome.
Definitely a worthwhile take-in for the whole family.
Now, that goes back to, you mentioned 22s. You mentioned, I believe it's two or three 22s in your article.
Oh, the right? The Marlin is a real good choice. The Ruger 10/22 is probably the most popular. But any good repeating 22 will get you through it. Be a bit of a challenge to do it with a bolt action. I'd recommend a semi-automatic. My girlfriend's grandson, we took him to an Appleseed. He's going into the Marine Corps. And we thought it would be a good running start for him, along with some other training we provided. And we used the Smith & Wesson Military and Police 22. It's a very functional copy of the AR-15 platform. And particularly if you've got a young person who's looking at military service in the future, it certainly gives them a running start on the manual of arms, the mechanical operation of that type of firearm.
Awesome. How do you like that 10/22?
Oh, I think it's great. There's a reason they've sold seven figures worth of them over the years. They are reliable. They're accurate. They've just come out with one your readers may be, or your listeners may be interested in, the takedown model. I haven't had a chance to test it for accuracy yet, but the thing fits in a little backpack that you sling over your shoulder. Looks like you've got a collapsed fishing rod or something in there. In seconds, you've got the rifle together. And Ruger now has their own extended magazine that's very reliable with that gun. Some of the aftermarket long magazines are for the 10/22, and some are not. I've been using Butler Creek with good success, but I just picked up one of the Ruger magazines, and I'm looking forward to trying that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's, I've gotten a couple of them at gun shows or what have you, and didn't have much success. Hadn't feed problems, but that's great. I love the 10/22. I'm a huge fan of it myself, so I was kind of curious what your take was on it. I personally like and actually have just about every gun you mentioned in that article, and so I obviously agree with you 100% on your take on that article. But one thing you mentioned at the end of it was this isn't the end-all be-all list either.
Yeah, there's tons of guns out there, just like there's tons of automobiles. And everybody's different. It's kind of like picking out a pet at the SPCA. There's one that you're just going to bond with, and it wants to follow you home. And it's a good reason to belong to a gun club where, the whole fraternal element is a big part of it, and folks try out each other's guns. And it's a good reason to occasionally spend a day at one of the public shooting ranges where they rent different types of guns. And without making a huge financial investment, you can find out, does this thing work for me as good as the gun magazine said it worked for their tester? Does it fit me, or does it seem awkward? Are there controls where I can comfortably, naturally reach them, or am I going to have to completely relearn how I run a firearm?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. As always, I agree with you, man. Hey, I know you got to get going, and we really appreciate you again coming on and helping our listeners out there decide on some firearms. As always, your advice is awesome and something that we always look forward to. I appreciate it.
And I appreciate it, too. Thank you so much, Mr.
Always a pleasure. Let me leave you listeners with two words, safety first. And that goes double if you're new to the gun.
That's right. Absolutely. Hey, Matt, I really appreciate it again, Masada. How can they find you if they want to find out more information about you?
The website is http://massadaioobgroup.com.
So that's massadaioobgroup.com. Great.
Correct.
Hey, thanks a lot, Masad. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Be safe.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. Well, there you have
it. That was great.
Words awesome. From the man. Words from the man right there. So I'm excited. Glock 19 looks like it's the next one on my list of purchases. So
you don't have a Glock 19 yet?
I don't. Like I said, I got rid of all my 9mm stuff.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought you'd have. Well, how many 9mm did you have?
I actually had. I had the CX4 Storm, which is kind of like a carbine, 9mm, and then I had three pistols. So, but none of the pistols wasn't a huge fan of any of them. I had the Smith & Wesson, that he mentioned. It was a stainless steel, but dang, it was heavy. That's one thing that, like he mentioned, the police force, I mean, they're built like tanks. The problem with that is when I'm trying to build stuff, where it's the end all be all gun for me, then or something that I carry in my bag all the time, I need it to be light as well as durable. And the problem with that was that the guns were built like tanks, but really heavy, and they weighed down heavy in the bag. So I decided to sell them all, and I was going to look for. Excuse me. I was going to look for something lighter weight, and so I think this Glock 19 might do it. One of the things I've never had actually is a Glock, so I know they're really popular. Everybody knows them and everybody likes them, and I've just never I've never had an opportunity to own one. So I'll try one of those out, the Glock 19, but he was talking about the governor that I got, and the governor is a good gun. I do like it. But he's right. It's not near as accurate. So that's one of the issues. And obviously the Glock 19 is super accurate. So that'll probably be the route I go. What about you? You said you don't have any. So what are you gonna do?
Well, I'm probably gonna go the Glock route, but. But I think more importantly, obviously a handgun, and I want to get that Remington 870 Express, as he had mentioned. What we're looking at, what I've been looking at for a while, is the Marlin or even the Remington 1022. Remington 1022? Yeah. I want to get a 22 because our son Joshua is 6 years old. He needs to, I don't know about you, Ron. I don't know what you did with the, with Ronnie Jr. and the rest of the good boys or, the girls.
It's a Ruger. It's a Ruger 10/22, just so you know.
Ruger 10, yeah, that's right. I knew something was off. Ruger 10/22. So what we were looking at is, I believe in, my kids, at least my son has his own tool set, complete socket set, socket wrench. He has a hammer. He has safety goggles. He has earplugs. He has work gloves. He has mechanic gloves. We emphasize tools, or at least I emphasize tools ridiculously for everything. So he has his own scaled-down version of stuff, things that, obviously he doesn't have his own reciprocating saw. But, and that's the way that we've handled weapons in terms of knife use, and also with gun use and with motorcycles and things like that. So I feel very strongly about my kids having a healthy appreciation for it because they're tools. I mean, but, in terms of 22, we're going to go out and do some squirrel shooting and small game, rabbit stuff. But I want him to have a healthy understanding for that tool as an asset within our red shed of products that we're using. And so we're looking at the Ruger. The shotgun is a no-brainer. Glock is a nice one. And there's some other few ones, but within the budgets that we want to maintain, and obviously the ammo that we want to build up too, because it's nice to have the firearms, but if you don't have, ammo to be able to go out and shoot. And that's one thing I love about Masad. He talks a lot about ammo. There's so much information that the gentleman has provided over the years. it's a wealth, And so I'm looking forward to being able to be as well versed in some of this stuff as you have. I mean, you guys, you and who else is there? For Fall. I was talking to For Fall yesterday. I mean, gosh, it's going to be exciting when I when I get a chance to play around with some of the stuff and get to know things more intimately as you all have experienced already.
Yeah, exactly. And Fearfall is another one that is a Glock fan. He's a huge fan of the Glock, so I'm sure he'll be touting that as well.
Ron, let me ask you on your weapons. Are you a big fan of taking them to the Smith afterwards and getting some add-ons, aftermarket add-ons to sight mounts or light beams or beam mounts or whatever these are, flashlight mounts, whatever.
No, I'm not.
You're not into mods?
No. No. I don't tack out my guns. Some people do. I mean, there's a couple of guns that I have that are tacked out a little bit. I got a Sega 12, that has a flashlight and stuff mounted on it. But I've seen some guys that have everything but the kitchen sink mounted to their guns, and it's just nah. I'm not into that. But I talked with Bubba last week, and he was teasing me about my bug out bag, and I'm more of the stripped down, what's the least I can carry to get the job done.
Minimalist, ultralight kind of thing.
Ultralight minimalist, because the problem with all those accessories is, first of all, you're trying to remember which accessory is where. It's just another thing that you're depending on that can fail, another failure point. So no, I don't use a lot of that stuff. I'm a super minimalist. So if I find a really light water filter system, for instance, that works, that's the one I'm going to use. Same with the guns. I mean, I'm always looking for what's the biggest bang for the buck. And that's why I chose the Governor, is because I could hunt squirrel, I could hunt rabbit, I could hunt pheasant, using the 410. I could do takedown with a 45, 45 Colt, and then I've got the 22 pistol that I can, so in my bag of adapters and as little amount of stuff I can carry one gun that can do several different jobs. Can it be perfect on all of them? Absolutely not, but it is a good gun. It's a great all-around gun that can do a lot of different things, so then
that's part of your BOB right now, right?
Yeah, the Governor is definitely part of the BOB. And the reason why is, I mean, there's not very many pistols out there that somebody can say, yeah, I can go pheasant hunting with it, there's just so many options for it. That's the cool part.
Pheasant is good eating, too, I got to tell you.
Oh, yeah, pheasant's great eating. So, the thing is that the gun is just a tool. It's another tool, and people get caught up with the gadget. Well, it's just like what we talked about with Survivor Bomb earlier, it's the gadgets, Don't get caught up in all the gadgets. Use it as a tool, and forget about all the glitz and glamour. People get caught up in that, and the problem with that is you end up spending a lot of money. And a lot of people know that my background is in cars. Here's a great example. You can buy, let's say a Mustang. You can buy a Mustang, and you can put a supercharger on it. You can do all this stuff, add NOS, and do all these things to it, and spend $30,000 in upgrades. Well, guess what? It's still not worth half of what you put in it. So you've lost. You've lost $15,000 just to have. So unless you're racing it and making money off of it, I'm all about frugality. I'm all about function. So if a gun without all those adapters can do 99% of what I need it to do, then that's the way I'm going to go. So,
yeah, that's something that we didn't get a chance to talk with Masad about a little bit, but, he's big on the psychology behind it, obviously, you know, working in law enforcement as long as he has and his experience as an expert witness. He's talked a lot about the psychology behind it. And one thing that I found really interesting here, I just want to mention this point because I'm sure that you have other things you'd like to talk about. There, you know, one thing that he talks about is officer mentality, but it also lends itself to, you know, whether you're a winner or a loser in a gunfight, you know, because the bottom line is we like shooting for recreation. All of us love, well, those of us who enjoy guns, we enjoy shooting for recreation. It's a lot of fun. And you improve your scores, you improve your marksmanship, and you get a chance to take your tool and make sure it's still working properly. But the downside about it is, if we ever have, because I never ran with the wrong folks, but I had an incident a couple of times in high school where, you know, tough guys are tough guys, and sometimes the guys who you're driving with are trying to be tough guys. And so we all grew up with, you know, friends and stuff. And I found myself in, you know, on the wrong side of a gun a couple of times because of the company I was with, that something had happened. It's completely isolated from us. Well, you know, you talk about winners and losers. And when Lenny was interviewing Mossad on that YouTube series, he said, well, tell us a little about the engagement of a firefight. And Mossad says very wisely, well, from which perspective, the winners or the losers? And so, you know, he talks about something he's seen time and time again is the mentality ahead of time. What is your mentality? If the officers that decided years ago from an MO point of view that they were going to, whatever happened to them, they were not going to go down. If they got hit with a knife, if they got hit with bullets, they were not going to go down. They were going to do everything they could to preserve their lives. And the cases where they weren't debilitated because of an injury, they were able to do such, to respond because of their previous mindset. And, you know, what you're talking about, I completely agree because that's the way I live my life too. Minimalist, functionalist. If it's going to work, let's be ultralight about it. Let's be practical about it. And forget enough with the fluff. Let's do away with that. It's completely unnecessary. So, yeah, I completely agree with you. And I'll be picking your brains when I'm ready to add that weapon into the bug out bag. You know, I'll be giving you a call and probably giving Mossad a call too.
Yeah, totally. Well, hey, it's about that time. We've got to answer to some of our sponsors here. So I'd like to take a quick break and we'll come back for the last half hour of the show and wrap her up.
Let's pay the bills.
All right.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238. 866-762-9238 or go to Enerfood.com. That's Enerfood.com. Enerfood.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They're the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm your host, Colorado Ron, and I'm here with David Safewater. David is filling in for Bubba DaVinci, who's out of town this week. So we've gotten to pick on him without anybody saying anything or fighting back. So, Dave, one of my questions for you, actually, is that you have a new radio show out now, don't you?
I do. It's called the David Safewater Show, and it's on Tuesdays here on the Preparedness Radio Network. And, you know, we're supposed to go by Mountain Time or Central Time or Eastern Time. I just go by where I am, which is Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. on Tuesdays. And I'm really excited, and we're going to cover we cover tons of different topics, have very exciting guests, and hopefully create some entertaining topics for people. That's really about it.
Now, one of the things I suggest, if you guys are listening to this, go and download his first show. I was shocked. I guess I shouldn't be, because I know you're gonna do great. But I was shocked at how well the show went, and your first guest, the first person you've had on there for an interview, opened my eyes completely to something that I've never. I never even thought about, really. Can you explain a little bit about that? Because I can't even remember the term anymore.
Charcuterie, that's the term.
Charcuterie, about, that's right.
Isn't that funny? That's a funny word. You know, it's great. Thanks for bringing that up. In fact, I had been working for a couple of months to get Brandon and Lauren Sheard from farmsteadmeatsmith.com to do an interview. And they had been in transition of growing their business. They're doing education. They moved into a new house. They are amazing individuals. And unfortunately, Lauren wasn't able to be on because they weren't able to find the sitter for the children. But Brandon was on. He made the time. And it's amazing. What they do essentially is teach people how to be more thrifty through the art of charcuterie, which is being able to preserve meat. And explicitly we're talking about pigs, pork. That's what they specialize in. And they go around and they teach farmers. The farmers call up and say, hey, I'd like you to teach me the art of charcuterie kind of stuff. And essentially they'll go out and they'll teach them how to do all their own cuts. Now, if you go get a chance. Now, Ron, did you watch the movie that they made on the anatomy of the
pig? I did. That was so cool.
I want to hear your thoughts. What did you like about that?
Well, what I loved. Well, first of all, I thought they did an excellent job on the film work itself. And then, you know, I learned about the blood. What do they call it, the blood sausage? Called the, you know, and how to make that. But what I liked most about it was he turned it into an art. Really.
Yeah.
I mean, it was eye candy, which I wasn't expecting. You know, I was just like, "Oh, this is gonna be nasty, all butchered up and all." But he made it look very artful. It turned it into a beautiful thing that I wasn't expecting. That I really wasn't, that's kind of what surprised me.
Yeah, who would be expecting it? Because you know, I saw the still. The funny thing is, a number of months ago, somebody had posted it on Facebook, and I was like, "Okay, you know." In between, you know, reading content and writing content, taking phone calls, and, you know, helping Maria with the kids, you know, it's very tough to think that something is worth your time, especially in video content, because there's so much of stuff online. Some of the stuff is excellent, and some of the stuff is just super poor in quality and content. But I watched that link, and I went and I had to watch it in two different sittings. It was amazing. That movie, anatomyofthrift.com. If you get a chance to go download it or go watch it, for those of you who haven't yet, anatomyofthrift.com. It is a
totally worth
beautiful.
Your time.
Yeah, absolutely worth the time. Cinematography is fantastic. The music they have. Don't you just love the whole animation that they do with the drawing and the chop?
With the drawings, yep, exactly. It was a great job. It was something I never expected, honestly. That was one of those beautiful surprises that just come out of left field that you just weren't expecting, and just totally made my day, really. And I only saw it because you posted on Facebook that your show was on, and I was like, oh, that's right, his first show's today. Boom, and I went and listened to it and was completely taken back.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And the fact that these guys, both Lauren and Brandon, have master's degrees in college, and look what they're pursuing. They're helping people eat healthier and be more resourceful. So they are minimalist. I mean, because the whole art of charcuterie is nothing is wasted, nothing. And they can teach the courses on chicken, on veal, I think venison. You know, it really is amazing. So
what would it take to get them to the expo?
You know what? They were looking forward to the Seattle one. When we get over to Seattle, they'll be there. But, I think we can work that. In fact, I'm talking about that. I've already mentioned it to them, it's something that we can do. So we'll talk behind the scenes about that, but they absolutely would love to participate. I think they would have engaging
class on that. I would love to see a class on that. Now, that's one I would shut down the rest of the show. I don't care. I want to listen to this. Don't leave me alone. Because that was fascinating. It was totally fascinating. So I would totally be down for that class if we can get them there.
Now, it was amazing to me to learn the number here that he threw out there. With one pig grown and fed properly, or raised and fed properly, I should say, you're looking at 300 pounds of food. That is from one pig. I was shocked. I really was shocked. I don't know how much meat I'm eating on a yearly basis. This is making me want to go back.
Oh, I don't
want
to add it up.
Yeah.
I don't want to add it up. I don't want to know.
Yeah, let's not go there. So we're going to have more guests. I mean, I have a whole list of individuals that we're going to have on there. Really, really cool. And it's going to be great. So I'm very happy to be on the Preparedness Radio Network here. And, the show is David Safewater on Tuesdays. But we're going to have other content. I have other shows that are going to be available outside of that live show. So we're going to be rotating new content in, and Steve is such a great guy to be able to help us do that. So I'm really, really excited.
Well, Dave, not to put the pressure on you, but you set the bar pretty high on that first show.
I just got to keep finding great folks like him, and there's plenty of them. I'm really, really happy. So, and we're going to have Lauren on, too. Lauren's going to be on. We want to pick her brain. I want to talk to her about what her transition has been, the adjustment in terms of going away from what she studied in psychology to what she's doing now, because psychology has a bearing in every aspect of every one of our lives. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But listen, you guys have been doing really good here with the show. You've had some wonderful guests. It's amazing that you're doing a three-hour show. You know, I'm busy enough just doing a one-hour show.
I was about ready to choke him when he said that. I was like, what? 3 hours? No, it was awesome. No, we've had nothing but a great time. And honestly, it was proving a point, and I'm glad he did it because, one of the things he wanted to prove was, they said that prime time internet radio talk time is Friday nights, and that's the time that we were on. And he wanted to prove a point that he could go 3 hour show because we were running out of time with our guests. You know, like our first interview with Mass was like 25 minutes. We were trying to hurry up and get everything in, and there just wasn't enough time. People were asking questions in the chat rooms, and we could not get to the, we couldn't get to the questions fast enough, and it was just like, oh man, this stinks. So he wanted to prove that you could do a 3 hour show that people still would listen because we loved our live listeners. We appreciate all the participation in the chat room, but that's still only like 10%, if that, not even 10% of the people that actually down. It's like 1% actually, now that I'm looking at the numbers. It's like 1% of the people that actually listen to the show. Most people download the show and listen to it later. And so, being able to listen to it at their own time. So he said, well, anytime works. And so let's do Saturday mornings. And, of course, the second thing I thought was, well, what time? What time? What time are you talking about? That's Saturday morning, man. So
I've been making some eggs and some toast.
I know. Get my bacon and my eggs on, man. You're messing me up. So
yeah, I know you. You told me. It's like you told me you were about ready to kick his neck off when he told you that time frame, right? Fry up some bacon,
that's
some
right.
eggs. You know, I'm gonna have. I gotta tell you, I'm gonna have Ed Bassmaster on my show.
Oh,
I don't have it arranged yet, but it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen.
I think that would be awesome.
You know, I gotta say, man. One thing is, it's I don't know, I'm just sort of rambling in my head, connecting dots here. One thing I love about the community that we're involved with, the self-reliance community, and then all the subcategories within that, whether it's survivalists, whether it's bushcraft, whether it's homesteaders, I love the fact that for the most part, our communities have excellent senses of humor. Now, they vary, but we all know how to laugh. And a lot of times we like laughing when we're eating. And together. So it's really cool. I'm looking forward to this expo in Colorado Springs, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. May 18th and 19th, it's going to be great.
Absolutely. You know, I try not to take anything too serious. You know, life's too short not to have a lot of fun. So if I'm not laughing and enjoying myself and learning all in the same mix, then I lose interest fast. So we try to keep things light. One of the things, actually, where's that email? Somebody sent me an email this morning, and I was looking at it right before the show. Here it is. I won't go into the whole email here, but I'll just take out this little tidbit here. The one thing that we really appreciate about your expo is the fact that you make it, let's see, one thing we really appreciate about your expo is the fact that you make it a family-friendly environment, and our kids feel at home there, almost as if they're at a church activity.
Wow. What a compliment.
I thought that was cool. Yeah. That's what it's all about, is getting the family out there to the events, getting your family involved in prepping, and preparedness and self-reliance and the lifestyle. One of the number one questions that everybody asks me, I say one of the number one. There's so many questions people ask, but it seems to stand out at the top of the list is what am I preparing for? And it's and that's the reason why I go with self-reliance, and I concentrate on self-reliance, because self-reliance is a lifestyle. I'm not preparing really for any one event, and that's what I try to get past and try to get people thinking about is, listen, it's not about preparing for 2012 or Y2K or any of this other nonsense. It's all about a lifestyle, so that you're living a self-reliant lifestyle, so that whatever happens, that you're prepared for. You don't have to worry about you're not in a rush preparing for something that might or might not happen.
You know, that's a wonderful point, because I get asked that question all the time too. I did a seminar, a water course here at Educational Water Treatment for Honeyville Grain out here in Rancho Cucamonga here last weekend. And, I talked to the store manager. He called me on Friday and said, hey, are you ready for it? I said, yeah, I'm ready. I was sicker than a dog, man. I was in bed trying to recoup. I didn't know if I'd have my boys, thinking I'm going to be out there with the N95, mask, because I don't want to, spread any kind of germs to anybody. But, and when I was out there, and we ended up having 40 people. On Friday, there were 10 people signed up. But on Saturday, there at that class, we had 40 people show up. Now, we had a guy who was an irrigation expert for golf courses, and then we had a guy from the Department of Water and Power from, Los Angeles County here. And I got to tell you, man, these guys took me behind the scenes individually and shared with me some pretty frightening things for people that wouldn't be ready for these kind of things. It's frightening if you're not prepared and you're not a resourceful person, but for somebody who is prepared. So when people ask me all the time, well, what are you preparing for? And my response to them is, well, why would you not be preparing for something? It's not a scarcity mindset. It's the sense that, listen, within the last 200 to 300 years, historically, human beings have not had to worry about having a credit score. Okay. They have not had to worry about having their food. They simply had the luxury of going to a shelf and picking up this container that has food-like substances that will give them nutrients to be able to go to work for a company and do this work on a computer that's simply software and hardware together that's doing something of value. You know, we are completely going against what historically human beings have had to do, which is raise their own food, slaughter their own meat. I mean, so in terms of repairing, you know, who of us does not have car insurance? That's a preparedness thing. You know, with heaven forbid we get hit by somebody who's not insured, are we up a stream without, you know, up a creek without paddles? And so people, when they, you know, think, oh, well, you're one of them preppers or whatever, well, aren't you? Don't you have a homeowner's mortgage insurance? Don't you have fire insurance? You know, don't you have, if you don't have medical insurance, don't you, you know, I use doTERRA oils. I got to tell you, those oils have helped me. The expectorant properties of the different oils have helped me recoup. I was a skeptic. I started putting some of those oils on my feet in proper combinations when I, you know, prevent illness and to recoup faster. And I got to tell you, Ron, I'm a skeptic. I'm an optimistic, cautious skeptic. But
I've had several.
You've had experiences too. In fact, you guys are the ones that got me started on this. So, you know, what resources do we have in terms of all the tools, like Masad said, and even Lisa said too? Tools are valuable, but the training is even more so. So, you know, it's just fantastic. I feel so fortunate to be able to work in this category, serving the communities that we do. What a blessing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and like you said, the oils, for instance, I never would have even known about the oils had I not been at the Self-Reliance Expo. Somebody, you know, approached me with them. And I was a complete 100% skeptic on that stuff. Just like I was on Interfood, the green drink, for instance.
Oh, the superfood.
The superfood. I'm like, super what? What do you mean superfood? I got Snickers here. That's a superfood. And they said, you know, the beautiful thing about the expo is that you're able to try it. And what I like about that is you can't be a fraud at the Self-Reliance Expo because people totally call you out on it. I mean, you got to try it. If you don't like it, you don't see a result, you won't come back. And so, he did. He put his money where his mouth was. He said, here, just try it. And come back to me in 15 minutes and tell me how you feel. And, so I tried the green drink and I was like, oh man. And he was telling me what was in it and all this stuff. And so I was all nervous before I drank it. I was like, this is going to taste like crap and blah, blah, blah. And man, it was delicious. And I drank it. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I was like, man, that's surprisingly good. And he goes, thanks. He goes, I'll talk to you in 15 minutes. And I took off and I didn't even think about it. And before I realized it, man, I was just trucking. And I realized that my energy level went, you know, way up. And so when I came back by, and it was probably 30 minutes later, I came back by and I looked at him and he's like, how you feeling? And then I was like, and that's when it really dawned on me. I was like, wow, I've had a lot more pep in the last half hour. And so I came over and that's when I started engaging in conversation with him and learning more about it. But, you know, that's what the expo is all about, you know, is picking up on these new things and learning new things to help you. You know, that's probably kept me from getting sick. I don't know how many times, you know, and the doTERRA oils has helped me, preventing getting sick or helping me with a backache or, not to get into too much detail, but I had, you know, we've had kids that have had illnesses that were, threatening enough that we were going to have to take them to the emergency room. And so we started calculating it and adding it up. And in the last 2 years, we've saved 6 trips to the emergency room. That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money. I mean, we haven't gone to the emergency room since we started taking, matters into our own hands. And now I feel like I'll never go to the emergency room now that I've got Dr. Bones, Nurse Amy's new book, That's another thing I would have gotten unless I was at the expo. So, I mean, it's just, it's invaluable, the information that we learn. So I'm excited.
And, you know, the relationships that we formed there, I mean, who would have thought? Mike Adams at our last expo in February in Mesquite, Texas, was there. And he was letting people know the real deal with the things he talked about. I mean, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, I used to work in a medical setting, and I worked intimately with doctors and specialists in trauma, in every specialty of medicine. And I'm very familiar firsthand with
what it's like. And I got to tell you, you know, the first off, that whole setting, that'll make you sick just because of exposure. But you develop a certain immunity to certain things, and your body gets stronger. Ron, you know, the only reason I got sick this last week, I had been burning the candle at both ends, and just like you. And I think that finally my body said, you know what, I'm done. I got around the right antigen, or I got around the right pathogen, which caused my body to get sick because I was not taking care of myself. I was not eating properly, and I was staying up working feverishly. And,
and then,
you know what, none of us is an island to ourselves, and, you know, we're going to fall down and we're going to get sick. So with that, I feel the difference. When I take my superfood drink in the morning with the juices, and I maintain my proper hydration, I'm sleeping properly, I feel a huge difference than when I'm doing everything else and not taking my superfood, because that stuff is nutrient dense. So I love it. It's fantastic. And this expo, I am so excited. It's only going to get better. Look at July. We're going to be down in Dallas with all these folks spreading the message.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're right there, right next to Restoring Love, and I mean, it's just going to be crazy. I'm really excited about that one, you know.
And then North Carolina later this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mesa, Arizona? Heck, that's going to be huge. Yeah. So, we're pretty excited about it. Unfortunately, the time has flown by and we have to wrap it up. I got a little surprise for all you listeners out there. This show has been brought to you by Interfood. And if you actually go to their website, InterHealth Botanicals, you can look them up. And if you purchase anything from them, you type in the promo code REDSHED in the, because we're REDSHED Media Group. So if you type in REDSHED in the code, they'll give you an additional 10% off of any of their stuff there. So, try their Interfood. You're going to love it. I'm telling you. You know, mix that with some bananas, some frozen bananas and strawberries. It's amazing. It's really, really good stuff. But I really appreciate them throwing out that offer for our listeners. So, especially if you have to have your food storage, if your food storage is mediocre, having that green drink in there and adding that to your food storage takes your nutrition level way up. So keep that in mind when you're buying that stuff. I mean, we buy it by the case here in our house. So, anyway, it's been a great show. We love having
drum roll. I want to hear it. I want to hear this. We talked about it. We already talked about the downloads.
Yeah, we already talked about it. We are done.
I haven't had my superfood today.
If you weren't here at the beginning of the show, we've broken a million downloads. So thank you everybody for your participation in our radio station here in PRN. We really appreciate Masad Ayub and Lisa Bedford, Survivor Mom, for being on our show today. And it's been a great show, and we'll talk with you guys again next week. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.